Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel all right. I feel all right tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband.
All right, all right, all right. Good evening. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio. I'm Nick DiGilio. My producer is Tom Hush. And we'll be with you till 4. Vic Vaughn in the newsroom reporting the news. That's us. And that's who's going to be talking throughout the morning as the show continues. Coming up on the show in just a few minutes, we're going to have Linda Godfrey on. She's an author, an investigator, and a cryptozoologist. You know those weird creatures that everybody sees? You know, like the chupacabra? Is that your favorite, Tom, the chupacabra?
I would say Mothman's my favorite.
Yeah.
Because I was working at WGN during the summer of Mothman.
Yeah.
Couple years back, I was freaking out. I was actually having nightmares.
Well, she wrote a book called she's written several books, but she's wrote a book called I Know What I Saw. And we want to hear from you if you've ever had like a weird encounter with a creature of any kind or a sighting of any kind. I love this stuff. I love I've had the authors of a couple of books about the chupacabra on a few times over the years, and I'm always just fascinated by it. Like people are like, you know, I love the title of her book. I Know What I Saw. I'm not making this up. I Know What I Saw. So Linda Godfrey is going to join us to talk about the creatures. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. If you've ever had like a weird experience that you can't explain, or if you're fascinated by these weird creatures, we're going to get into details on all of this stuff and learn all about cryptozoology with author Linda Godfrey. And that'll be coming up a little bit in just a few minutes. We have our regular Friday features, although Vic is taking a week off from Vic's Picks, so we won't be doing Vic's Picks. But after 3 o'clock, we will have You Big Dummy, which, of course, is real news stories of real people doing real dumb stuff. And we read the stories, and then we vote on who the biggest dummy is. Tom votes, I vote, and then you vote with the first person through at 312-981-7200. We have Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty, makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We also have Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7, as you should, because it's an awesome station. Listen 24/7. When anybody mentions me, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And, of course, Fly Jams Friday. We like to kick off your weekend with some fly music, some R&B, some soul. We like to have a funky start on our Friday morning, so we'll do that. That's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's also talk and text, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And that's a great way to stay connected. And also, subscribe to our podcasts. You know, every second of every show is podcast. And we have a lot of people who listen via podcast. We thank you for that. I know some people can't stay up all night, so they choose the podcast option, which is an easy thing to do. You can check out all of our podcasts at WGNRadio.com. You can go to iTunes or any place where you can get them. Download them, subscribe. It's free, and they will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's what's happening on the show tonight/this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are also going to talk about the monkeys. It's hard to believe, but on this date, 19th, no, it's this date or is it 17th? So when we switch over at midnight to the 17th, that'll be the anniversary of NBC greenlighting the Monkees TV show. I love the Monkees. I grew up watching them. They greenlit it in 1965, year I was born. So we're going to talk about the Monkees, the TV show, and some of the best Monkee songs. Our old friend who used to do traffic on the show, Esmeralda Leon, she loves the Monkees. Before you were born, there was a big resurgence in Monkees' popularity. At some point in the mid-'80s, mid to late 80s, they started rerunning the Monkees TV show on MTV, mm-hmm. and it got a whole new audience. And so they all got together except for Michael Nesmith, and they toured. I remember they played Poplar Creek, and it was like sold out. And they had that resurgence in the 80s. And then finally Nesmith decided that he would come in. And, you know, Peter Tork passed away, and so did Davy Jones. It's sad. I loved that show. I used to watch it because it used to be on. It was on after all the Saturday morning cartoons. It was on every Saturday, like I think about 11 or 11:30 a.m. And I watched it all the time. And I love their music. I know that they were a band that was they weren't really a band. They were kind of put together. But I don't care. I love the Monkees, and so we're anniversary on that. Tonight, I have it on my DVR, and I'm watching it the minute I get home in the morning. Tonight, ABC had a two-hour special about Richard Pryor. And I happen to think Richard Pryor is the funniest man that ever lived, ever. I don't think anybody is better at stand-up. Carlin is close. But I don't think there was ever a funnier person on this planet than Richard Pryor. So we're going to talk about Pryor, and then we're going to jump into stand-up comedy. Who makes you laugh? Who do you think are great stand-ups? Modern ones, classic ones. We'll talk about the art of stand-up comedy and who you think are the funniest people. So that's coming up on the show. As always, 312-981-7200. If you want to get in here, let me officially say hello to Tom Hush, my producer. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all.
Looking forward to the weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I'm still kind of in my mourning phase for Neil Peart.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to Rush all week, but I think I'm going to put it to bed this weekend to give myself a break.
Yeah.
But
I think a lot of people have been listening to Rush all week. I think that's a common thing that's happening.
I mean, I think at least three times this week I sat down and watched the documentary Beyond the Lighted Stage.
Yeah.
Which is a great documentary about Rush. It's available on Netflix if you've got Netflix. And it just is a loving portrait of the band. It really is.
Yeah. Well, I loved Rush. They were the best. So, anyway, here we go. We're going to start, and you can call us if you want. If you have a story that you can't really explain, a creature sighting or anything like that, we're going to get into all of that and talk about cryptozoology with author Linda Godfrey. That's coming up here on 720 WGN. And the magic from the hand will make weird signs. Things I've never seen before. Behind the doors, through an imagination, weird signs. Nick DiGilio here, and we are live in the Skyline Studio. The show continues. Tom Hush is my producer, and I'm Nick DiGilio, and there we go. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We would love to hear from you if you've ever had a weird encounter or you like the urban legends and monsters and things like that. Well, you're going to love this. Linda Godfrey is the author. Her latest book is called I Know What I Saw. She's written many, many books. And she's an expert in this subject matter, and she's a cryptozoologist. And let's welcome Linda. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello. All right.
How are you? See me?
You can hear me, right? You're all you're good.
Yes. Yep. I hear you perfectly.
Okay. Thanks. Good. Okay, Linda. Let's start out with how you got into this. Did you have an encounter with a weird creature of some kind, and that's why you started doing this?
No, I actually was working for a newspaper in Walworth County, Wisconsin, and I had just started as a reporter. I was doing editorial cartoons before that, and I started hearing rumors that people around my own little hometown were saying they saw something that looked like a werewolf on this one road outside of town called Bray Road. And I remember I laughed. But then I happened to be interviewing the county animal officer about some vocal dog mutilations, and there were some other things. And I said very casually, hey, have you heard about this thing people are talking about on Bray Road? And he said, oh, you mean the werewolf? and he pulled out of his desk a manila file folder marked werewolf. So at that point, when you've got a county official with a manila folder, you know, titled werewolf in your office, that's news. I mean, you have to report it. And surprisingly, nobody else wanted to touch the story. And, you know, I was pretty naive about how it would go. I really didn't think much of it, but I was curious because I thought, well, all these people, and he shared what was in that folder were contact information for all these people who have been seeing it. And there were quite a few. They varied a lot. I noticed there were some young people, there was a middle-aged woman who worked a night shift at a factory, farmers, you name it. It was very wide, and I thought, well, this doesn't seem right if they're hoaxers or something, because if you're going to pull a hoax, why would you call the county official and give them all your contact information so they can haul you in, you know? So I started interviewing them and became convinced that they weren't lying. They'd seen something. I did not think that it was an actual medieval or Hollywood-style werewolf, but it did sound unusual. And the main thing that all of them noticed about it, they said it looked like a wolf or German shepherd walking on its hind legs or running on its hind legs or holding roadkill in its paws the way that canines don't do. And so we ran the story. I interviewed these people. It was New Year's weekend, 91, 92, that issue. And I remember my editor and I just said, we're talking. We said, well, we said this is just going to be, you know, 2 weeks fun. Local people will have it. It's a dull time of the year anyway. And it went, you know, if it was modern times like now, we would have said it went viral, but it went national. There were just people from the East Coast, the West Coast. Inside Edition came. The Old In Search Of came. It was just crazy. Tons of radio programs. And, it just took us all by surprise. But I realized, you know, thinking about it, that really, how many instances are there in the world today where you've got contemporary sightings of a werewolf, or what people say is a werewolf, by multiple people? You know, it's pretty unusual.
Yeah.
So that started me off. I did not even know what a cryptozoologist was at that point.
Yeah. Well, listen, Linda Godfrey is our guest right now. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Linda Godfrey is a zoologist, and we're talking about all these weird creatures and sightings. And if you have any urban legend things that you would like to ask questions about or talk to us about, it's 312-981-7200. Linda Godfrey is our guest. Linda, what exactly is cryptozoology then?
Well, literally, crypto comes from the word meaning hidden. Or unknown, and zoology, you know, is the study of animals. So it literally means hidden animals. And there's a real scientific side to it. There are people who have actual degrees and doctorates in zoology, and they're the ones who go hunting around the jungles for the next example of an unknown little deer, or you can think of the big fish called the coelacanth that was supposed to be extinct for many, many millennia, and one of those showed up. So in those cases, they're looking for known species that just are believed to be non-existent, or, you know, it's kind of a mystery hunt. But then the second meaning would be that has come to be used today is that people are looking for really unknown animals that are seen by people, but there's never enough evidence to prove it. Things like Bigfoot, the big thunderbirds, chupacabras, many, many different forms of animals. So that's the basic definition.
Okay. And you were talking about the Beast of Bray Road. What's the latest on that? Have there been sightings? Because you were, you know, this got all started, as you said, between 1991 and 1992. That was a long time ago. Are there still reported sightings of the Beast of Bray Road?
Yeah, actually, they do show up every once in a while. There's not quite the big grouping of them that there was, 30 years ago. But they do show up. I still have people reporting them to me. And weirdly enough, there's a farm right at one end of Bray Road that I've been assisting the owner. It's about 40 acres. He grows corn and that sort of stuff. And he began finding mutilated animals on the edges of his field, and we've had some really weird experiences out there.
So it's still... So it's still
there's
it's,
more than just...
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, there's something about the land out there. Exactly, yeah. I two other people and I saw one of those. Some people call them orbs, like a basketball-sized sphere of light mm-hmm. that traveled all across the field and stopped right in front of the car, right in front of us.
Mm.
You know, there's just no... And these guys, one of them is a retired physics and math teacher from Chicago, and the other is an architect from the Chicago area. And we all saw it. And had the exact same experience with it. The only reason it went away was because the guy who was driving got nervous and grabbed the mag light and jumped out of the car and shone the light on it. And we all had the instinctive feeling that it was surprised, and it just sort of winked out. And the guy who got out of the car immediately, and this is a 6'3", pretty stalwart guy, Sanjay Singhal is his name. Immediately got sick and said we had to leave. So we did. Who knows, he might have saved us from getting abducted, because there are lots of legends and lore about these big basketball-sized orbs. People say that they turn into Bigfoot,
mm-hmm.
that's a form that... And this is just the mythic type, but there are also people who believe that the Native American shamans travel in this form.
Wow. Well, you see, you saw it firsthand.
We did. And it wasn't just for a second. I mean, we got a really good look at it. The ironic thing was, I was just recovered enough that I was putting my camera up to my face so I could take a picture. And that's when Sanjay opened the car door.
Oh, yeah.
And we lost it. But yeah, it's just, that's the frustrating thing.
Yeah.
Trying to get the good picture of the whatever. Tracks are the best, I think. Most people have had so far.
Okay. Okay, Linda, we're going to continue talking with Linda Godfrey, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. More with author Linda Godfrey. She's an expert on cryptozoology. Stay tuned here on WGN. And if you have had an experience with a creature that you can't explain, or maybe you want to know more about it, you can text or call us at 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN, continuing on this Thursday night into Friday morning. We'll have our regular Friday features later on in the show. We're going to talk about the monkeys, because on this date, or actually on the 17th, NBC greenlit the TV show The Monkees. So we're going to talk about that. And earlier tonight, ABC had a two-hour documentary about Richard Pryor. And so we're going to talk about Pryor and other great stand-up comedians. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We are talking with Linda Godfrey. She is an author and an investigator, and she's written 18 books about strange creatures and phenomena. Her newest book is I Know What I Saw. Linda, let's continue our conversation.
So. Okay, and guess what I watched to prepare for your show? The two-hour documentary of the Gary Shandling Show.
Oh man, yeah, Gary Shandling. He was one of the funniest guys in the world. He really was.
So, oh yeah, just the best. Yeah. The best.
By the way, 630. You can text us at 312-981-7200. 630 texted in. Here's what they said, Linda. Wow, Linda's story about the werewolf just gave me the chills. Does that happen often when you tell these stories? Do people get kind of freaked out?
They do, yeah. Some people will get freaked out because they've actually had experiences that they don't want to admit or talk about, you know, and other people just, it hits them that here's this whole side of the world or the other world that I never knew about, and it sure sounds like there's something to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, so, I know that people do love these stories and love talking about them. I mean, you couldn't have 18 successful books without knowing that there is an audience for this and people are interested in it. When do you determine that you're going to investigate something? What's the process like before you say, okay, I will investigate this?
Well, normally when somebody contacts me, I ask them to write out their story first. You know, after giving me just a short general sentence. And then that gives me something to go on, and then I try to interview them more than once in person if possible. I don't have funding to, you know, float around the globe, but when I can get somewhere, I do. And there was one particular story that I did travel three different times to interview this husband and wife, and I had my own husband come along just as an extra truth detector because they claimed that a woman sitting in their church in a pew right across from theirs turned into a giant werewolf right in front of them and their two teenage children. And it had to be taken down with, and this is in northern Illinois, by the way.
Oh, okay.
And it had to be taken down by two of the church elders who happened to be right up in front. And it emitted this real unearthly cry. And when they had kind of, you know, muscled it down onto this pew, it just, the woman's appearance came back to it. Just kind of like, you know, a computer-generated thing you might see on TV, where yeah. One minute it's a woman and then it flows into this werewolf with goat's hooves, I might add. So this was one of the most far-fetched-sounding stories I'd ever had, but on the other hand, it was also some of the most solid witnesses. It was a husband and wife, middle-aged, just good salt-of-the-earth people, and their teenage daughter and son, they all agreed on it. She gave me facts, like the minister's name. I tracked him down, found him. He didn't want to talk to me about it, but which was a little bit more... they gave me the idea that maybe there really was something on his side.
Yeah.
And everything that they gave me, every little detail, street address, acquaintance thing, checked out to the letter. So, but I really wanted to take a lot of great care. When you have an unusual, my motto is unusual stories call for unusual interviewing to make sure you get it all. And there are times when, for instance, for this book, I had an encounter that was really great. It was a guy who was RVing with his three buddies of his in a field in Canada. They were shooting possums and raccoons in the dark with a shotgun and came across a full-maned lion.
Whoa.
Standing there. And
whoa.
It's interesting because you'd think that would be the only such story, but Lauren Coleman, who's a really well-known cryptozoologist in Maine, has written about that same thing, and it was a great story. But then the more I interviewed them, the more the story kind of fell apart. At first, there were four of them that saw it, then, you know, then three of them saw it, and then, well, the other ones were waiting, and only two of them really saw it. And one said it had a mane, and one said it didn't. And at that point, you know, there's no way I want to serve up, you know, a bad dish to my readers.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. We're talking
so
with we're talking with Linda Godfrey. She is the author of 18 books about strange creatures and phenomena. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk or text 312-981-7200. So, Linda, there are a lot of famous creatures out there. What are your favorites? Which ones are your favorites? What are some of your favorite stories?
I really, even though I kind of, coined that term of the Beast of Bray Road, I really am sort of partial to Bigfoot because I've had more interaction with them. You know, I feel like maybe I know their MO a little bit better. I also like, in the way of really appreciating all the I think over 100 stories around Chicago of this. They call it the Mothman,
right?
This bat-like creature around Chicago, and it's unusual because it's being seen in places like, you know, the Gold Coast, downtown Chicago, the School of the Art Institute, some of the Shishi suburbs, and that's unusual for any kind of unknown creature. Normally, they're liminal, which means the outskirts. They'll be on the outskirts of town. Or, you know, if you see them, they'll be on a bridge, which is something connected this place to that place, but it's not any place special. These creatures around Chicago and northern Illinois are showing up in just really odd places. I have a son that graduated from the School of the Art Institute, so I'm familiar with a lot of those places and have some theories about that, too. But I also probably, let's see, I think it was in 2006, had my own investigation with what I call the man bat. That was before I knew about the Chicago ones in La Crosse, which is just up the Mississippi River, you know, on the west side of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And there was a father and a son who had one of these giant winged birds swoop at right at the windshield of the pickup truck they're driving at night. Thought sure it was going to wham into them, but instead it just went straight up shrieking as it flew along. And I was out there within a few days and had a really good look around and found really strange objects, you know, in places they shouldn't be in. So it was kind of an interesting investigation. Interviewed the two witnesses, and they drew really good photo or really good sketches of it for me. So it's interesting. But that, again, it was a very liminal place on a hill outside of the town and in darkness. That's a much more typical sort of scenario for seeing one of these unidentified creatures.
Yeah. We're talking with Linda Godfrey, who is an author and investigator. She's written over 18 books about strange creatures and phenomenon. I Know What I Saw is her latest, and we're talking about some of these weird creatures that that people have seen or sightings. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. You know, you mentioned the Mothman. It was a big deal here a few years ago. There were a lot mm-hmm. of sightings, and it was, I mean, we followed it pretty closely here in the city. And it was really pretty crazy. There were so many sightings, and then it kind of died down. Does that happen a lot, you know, where people have a bunch of sightings of some mysterious creature, and then it dies down, but it comes back a couple of years later? Is that a cycle?
Yeah, I think it is. And you can, it's the same thing happened on Bray Road. I mean, if you can imagine that you're one of these creatures, and you're used to hanging out in the sundown or dark times of the day, and you have a lot of space, you know, it's not closely, you know, people yellow housing, that all of a sudden the place is lit up by headlights at night. There are all kinds of people going slow.
Yeah.
Sometimes shooting pop guns or something. You know, it completely changes the atmosphere. You know, and if they are, we don't know if these animals are real in as we believe we know real to be in our realm, or if they come from somewhere else. But either way, they're going to be very disturbed in whatever their usual habits are.
It's interesting because, like, once these things are reported, then people show up. It's like, you know, Linda, like Area 50, right. Like Area 51. If more people show up, it's less likely that you'll see anything, you know, because people just show up. They show up with their cameras, and there's so many people there that you probably won't see anything.
Exactly. I've been to the outskirts of Area 51 myself. I've got my two little Green Men souvenir mugs, you know, from the nearby store. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm a good example of that. So people are just drawn to the unknown. If they think there's some place where they can go and see something that's perhaps literally out of this world, you know, they're going to go. And we're curious folk. I mean, that's what people ask me why I'm still interested in it after all these years. And it's curiosity. I want to know what they are. I would love to be able to be the person that figures out, you know, if they're real or live somewhere else and come here through a portal or whatever. So, yeah, you can't blame people for wanting to see it.
No, I totally understand that. What do you think it is that you know, the cryptozoology and all of these things capture our imagination so much? Why are people so drawn to it? And you've been doing this for a long time and talked to a lot of people. What do you think it is about this?
Well, you know, I think being humans, we feel we're sort of at the apex of the animal kingdom, and we find, like, most of the time when you get these humanoid animals, they're examples of whatever the top predator is. You know, here we've got bear men and wolf men and even giant cat men. And if you go down into the southern hemisphere, you'll find standing upright great cats. You know, they have those jaguars and because it depends on what the top predator is, where you are. But we seem to identify with these animals because they're about our size. They have attributes we don't have. And I think it's just something that's been carried on since our earliest ancestors. And we either had to figure out how to get along with them or you know, use them for our own benefit. So, it's very interesting. I'm much more interested in that part of the study these days than I am in, you know, running around in the dark trying to catch one, because it just doesn't usually work.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of mythology that maybe isn't just pure myth. And our Native American people, the ones that I've interviewed, really believe that these creatures are originally from the spirit world, that they have ways that they can come through to be here when they want to procreate, when they want to eat certain things, various reasons that they have, and that they can go back to those same portals when they need to. And some people think that explains why you never find a Bigfoot skeleton.
Wow. All right, Linda, we're going to continue our conversation. Linda Godfrey is here. She is an author and an investigator of strange creatures and phenomena. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. I love this. Is one of my favorite TV themes of all time. Twin Peaks. Nick DiGilio here. We're continuing. We're live in the Skyline Studio. Tom Hush is our producer here, and I'm your host. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Yeah, that's coming up. We are discussing some really strange creatures and phenomena. My guest is Linda Godfrey. She is the author of 18 published books about strange creatures and phenomena. And we're discussing some of that with her. Linda, we have a call from a listener who would like to ask a question.
Okay,
here's Doc. Good old Doc. Doc, what do you got?
I got a question for Linda. Now, it seems like her forte is anecdotal stories about these creatures. But the skeptic in me would say, how often do you find evidence? And the world is camera crazy, so you could have all kinds of camera, you know, if something was around the city of Chicago. But, for instance, if a woman turned into a creature in front of me in a church and some guys wrestled with her, she might turn back into herself, but there might have been saliva, fur, feathers, this or that. When people have encounters, how often is she looking for physical evidence?
Yeah, how often does that happen? How often does that happen, Linda, physical evidence?
Well, if people know what to look for, the tracks are the thing. I found some pretty good strange tracks that look like elongated dog paws that are definitely not anything else, with the toes, with the points. You have to kind of acquaint yourself with what the regular animals are around, and then you'll be able to see what pops out. And I've also done quite a bit with trail cams. And here's the thing with the trail cams, and it's almost universal. You put the bait out, you set it up, and I know people have done this with like four or five cameras. You set it up in a way so that it will trigger the camera if the bait is moved in any way. And then you go and check it, and the bait is gone, and there's nothing on the camera. And very often, it's not just nothing. There's like a special pattern of static. I've had one where something actually turned the camera that was really tightly tied onto a branch and disguised, I thought, and turned it so that it was facing the sky. So I got nothing but pictures of the sky, and this nice big piece of fish was completely gone that I had put there. And so there's, and then people who do swear that they were taking a photo of it, when they get it, it's blurry. It's almost like they're in another, I can always never think of the right word, but that their electromagnetic field, we all have electromagnetic fields, is just different enough that it doesn't mesh with our technology, and it would explain well why we can't get a good photo. Mm. One good example would have been the Patty, the Gimlin, it's called Patty, is how people most think of it. Bob Gimlin is still alive and talking about it. They took the old-fashioned film, a reel of it, and had a very good photo of this, what they thought was a female Bigfoot running. And it is really realistic, and seems like the fur is too well made to fit the technology that they had in the 60s for making animal suits. That's very convincing. But it's a different, that film is a different type of camera than we have with all our electronics today. So that makes sense. And there are people who have had hair samples. And, in fact, there was a fairly convincing, there's a new Bigfoot show that's on, I think, Friday night that just started, that was able to find an unknown piece of, chunk of fur or hair. And they did a lab test on it and showed that it was completely lacking a medulla in the middle, which meant that it wasn't a known animal. So we do have these. The trouble is, though, you can find, you could find, say, hair and fur and scat and a whole bunch of things and take them in and have them all confirmed as not being any known animal, but there's nothing on the chart to say that, yeah, matches this. They don't exist on the chart.
Mm.
So that's another big problem that we have with it.
Okay. Linda Godfrey is with us. She is an author and investigator, and she's written 18 books on strange creatures and phenomena. Doc, thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. There you go. There's a... There you go. How many people have you? Do you encounter that? Do you have a lot? I'm sure you encounter a lot of skeptics, right, Linda? And about
oh,
that.
Oh, sure, and I don't blame them.
Yeah. Oh, you don't blame them? No.
I think it's better to be a little more on the skeptical side than completely believing everything. You know, because so many things can be explained by being misidentifications of animals. It's just when you get a, when someone has a really great sighting, they get a good look at something. It is like the title of my book. I know what I saw. People who have really had these experiences and maybe saw something in the daylight for several for a minute or you know longer than most people, they're sure of what it is. Well, not maybe the species, but they know it's nothing usual.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard for them when people don't believe that.
Yeah. Okay. We have another caller here. It's Carolyn. Carolyn, you're on WG.
Hi there.
Hi.
This happened, it happened about 40 years ago. I was headed westbound on Irving Park Road just into the Schiller Park Woods area. I can't think of the cross street right
sure.
now.
Sure, yeah.
And I had a red light, and there were no street lights in the woods. This was about maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. And this animal started crossing Irving Park. And when it got in front of my lane, it was a ways down on Irving Park, but I could still know what I was seeing. It had the body of a deer, and then where the neck would be was more like a person.
Wow.
It was just bizarre.
That's crazy. You know, Carolyn?
I know it is. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then it was in front of my lane, and then it turned to look at my headlights, and I could see the red beads in its light, and then it turned and looked forward and continued to cross Irving Park.
That's crazy. You know what? I appreciate you calling in and telling the story. I live on Irving Park. Thank you very much.
Okay, sure.
And you know what? About that same time, 40 years ago, I had one of the best reports of a Bigfoot sighting in Schiller Park.
In Schiller Park? In Schiller Park?
In Schiller Park. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And in fact, if you go to Linda Godfrey, my Facebook page, Linda Godfrey, I got photographs of, these are wolf prints, they're nothing unusual, but the photographs are right on my homepage. But, yeah, he had an amazing story. It's in my book, Monsters Among Us. It starts off the chapter on Bigfoot. Yeah, and he's a retired math teacher, very credible gentleman. But it was right about that same time frame.
Wow.
And
that's crazy.
And I saw something in the news just the other day about another thing that people have reported in Schiller Park. So that's kind of, probably now Schiller Park will be flooded with people. But
that's
Carolyn, I do have a box that you can write into if you go to lindagodfrey.com, which is my blog, if you'd like to tell me more about that.
Okay. Well, yeah, she has you can actually tell your stories at lindagodfrey. Go to lindagodfrey.com, and there's a blog post there that you can type in your story, and she'll look at it. I can't tell you the number of times I've been to Schiller Park, and I don't know if I'm going to go back now.
Yeah, that thing that she said, that really quite unusual, and I'm wanting to really hear more about it.
Yeah. Well, she can, Carolyn, thank you for the call, and she can share it with you on your webpage. So there you go. Linda Gottfried, it was so much fun talking to you. It's fascinating stuff. We barely scratched the surface with all of the creatures and all of the things that you've been writing about. But people can go to your website, and they can get your books. You have 18 of them. The latest one is called I Know What I Saw. Lots of fun to talk to you, Linda. Thanks for being a part of the show.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks to all your listeners,
there
too.
There you go. Linda Gottfried and the Schiller Woods. Oh, boy. Okay. We got everything you need to know in the newsroom, the Northwestern Medicine newsroom. That's coming up. And then after, we are going to jump in and talk about the monkeys. In 1965, NBC on this date greenlit the monkeys. And we're going to talk all about the monkeys and their best, maybe the best episodes. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here on the Nick DiGilio Show live in the Skyline Studio. We continue on this Friday morning. All the regular Friday features coming up after 3 o'clock. You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and Fly Jams Friday. Apparently, Luscious Hushes is getting requests already, getting a bunch of requests. People like the funky stuff. So get your request in now. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Tom Hush is my producer. I am Nick DiGilio. We're here till 4 a.m. And we are going to talk about Richard Pryor. Last night, I can't wait to watch the documentary, a two-hour documentary on ABC about Richard Pryor. It's my favorite stand-up and I think the funniest man that has ever lived. I can't wait to get home and watch it. So we're going to talk about Pryor, and then we're going to talk about stand-ups. Who are your favorite stand-up comedians and the art of stand-up and all that stuff? Who makes you laugh? 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you. You just heard the theme from the monkeys. So it was on this date in 1965 that NBC greenlit the monkeys. Tom, did you watch the monkeys?
I watched it kind of by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom was a really huge fan of the monkeys, especially Davy Jones.
Everybody loved Davy.
He was the heartthrob.
Yeah. Marsha Brady.
Oh yeah. Yep. Oh yeah.
So you just would watch it via her?
Yeah, I think she had some tapes. I think at some point they had it on tape, so she would always rent them and we'd watch the monkeys together.
I think the show is great. I think the show is really, I think it's funny and I like the music. I love the monkeys. I think they're great. And I would love to hear from you. Do you love the monkeys? What are your favorite songs? And did you watch the show? 312-981-7200. Who's your favorite monkey? That's the question.
I will say my first big exposure, though, was the film Head.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah,
but,
no, ooh. I can't imagine, you know, like monkeys fans who watched the show who went to go see that movie and went, what is this? It's experimental, it's weird, it's crazy, and it's nothing like the show. The show was, like, really silly and goofy and over the top and fun, and when they made that movie, I think people were like, what? It's different. So here's the history of the NBC greenlighting the monkeys. And if you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. The inspiration came from the Beatles. The financing came from Screen Gems. The music came from Don Kirshner. And the stars came from an exhaustive audition process that began with an ad in the Daily Variety that said, from September of 65, Madness! Auditions for acting roles in new TV series, running parts for four insane boys aged 17 to 21. The ad drew more than 400 young men to the offices of Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, the young Hollywood producing team that would later make Easy Rider, but for now, we're trying to milk the establishment rather than defy it. They spent the next 4 months shooting, cutting, market testing, recutting, and remarket testing a comedy pilot they hoped would land on a network, would land them a network television deal. They got their green light on January 17th, 1966, when the National Broadcasting Corporation ordered 32 episodes of The Monkees for its upcoming fall schedule. The next 8 months were a bit of a whirlwind for Rafelson and Schneider. For the team of songwriters and studio musicians assembled by Don Kirshner, and not least for the four quote-unquote insane boys chosen to become the monkeys. Mickey Dolenz had never played a drum prior to being cast as Mickey, and Peter Tork and Mike Nesmith had no acting experiences prior to becoming Peter and Mike. Davy Jones was already a triple threat in the areas of acting, singing, and being cute, but it had never been Rafelson and Schneider's intention to find such all-around professionals. We wanted guys who could play themselves, Schneider said. Schneider explained to the press of at the NBC premiere of The Monkees in 1966, we didn't even look at actors. We didn't look for experienced rock and roll groups either. The strategy and indeed the entire grand scheme behind The Monkees succeeded beyond all expectations. Not only did the television show find success against formidable competition in its time slot from Gilligan's Island, but the group that was a made-for-television knockoff of The Beatles soon had actual records that were outselling The Beatles themselves. Vincent Canby of the New York Times foresaw the commercial success of Rafelson and Schneider's creation the moment he witnessed the reaction of a crowd of preteen girls during a promotional appearance by The Monkees just 3 days before their network debut. The Monkees' appearance yesterday afternoon on Broadway, Canby wrote, was just part of an elaborate campaign to capture the teenage imagination. The thoroughness of the campaign, as shown yesterday, might prompt renewed debate on the age-old question of free will. Do teenagers have a chance these days? So it was just this thing that was put together by these two guys, and it took off, and they became a real band, and they sold tons of records. And we still listen to The Monkees, and we still watch the show now, so many years later. So it's Nick DiGilio here on WGN, Tom Hush producing, and we're talking about The Monkees. Here is John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. On YouTube, they have a screen test for all The Monkees. At the end of the very first episode, they have the screen test for Davey and Mike, and it's done on the set for the Screen Gems show, The Farmer's Daughter.
Oh, my God!
Okay, but anyway, on YouTube, and you can look this up, see, they had a casting call, you know, for The Monkees, and then they pared it down to about 8 actors.
Yeah.
And I believe Danny Hutton and Nigel Brown were made the cut down to 8, but they were cut out. But anyway, on YouTube, you see these other scenes from, like, a pilot, and like, it'd be Mickey and Davey, but two other actors that aren't Mike and Mickey.
Yeah, I bet that's weird, you know what I mean, to see
yeah, it is.
Different guys playing the part, not the Monkees that we know and love from all those years.
Who, just this blonde guy that used to appear on talk shows like Mike Douglas. He had blonde hair and glasses, and he was a songwriter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
I think he wrote a song for the Carpers, but he was in the casting call for the Monkees. And also, all the members of the Love and Spoonful and Stephen Stills answered the casting call, too.
Stephen Stills?
Yeah, but the problem was he looked like Peter Tork. He knew Peter Tork. But he had an artery cyst tooth, so he wasn't very photogenic, and he knew he wouldn't make the cut.
Yeah.
He said he'd rather be a songwriter for the Monkees than actually be in the cast.
Yeah, that's great stuff. John, thank you for the call.
Okay.
All right, there you go. We're talking Monkees here. We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, and we continue.
He reminds me of a penguin with few and plaster hairs, talcum powder.
You know, I love the Monkees, man. That's a great song.
Yeah, Randy Scouse Git.
I love that song. Welcome. We're here. We're continuing. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It is the anniversary of the day that NBC greenlit the Monkees and history was made. Nobody thought it was going to be as big a success as it was, and to this day, we still love the Monkees. I've got 11 weird things that you might not know about the Monkees. We're going to talk about some of the best Monkey songs as well, and celebrate the Monkees, created on this date in 1966. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Here's Ike. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
Good.
Yeah, I have two things I remember about the Monkees. The first one, I heard that they were titled as like the first big boy band. Well, this shows is true because I remember when I was a kid back in the 80s, they would come on the evening, and I remember my sister going nuts every time they would come on evening. in the 80s. That shows you how, despite generations, that shows you that the Monkees still touches a lot of girls.
Yeah, well, they had that big comeback in the 80s, and they toured. It was because MTV started showing the Monkees in rerun, and a whole new generation was like, oh, these guys are great. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Speaking of MTV, I saw their movie on VH1, and what I found back in 2000, and what I discovered was that Jack Nicholson, I think he produced their movie Head.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
that's true. All right, thanks, Ike.
No problem.
All right, we're continuing. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right, what's up?
Oh, no, I was just calling. Probably one of the reasons I started playing music, I played drums or percussion, and was probably because of the Monkees.
Oh, wow.
Mickey Dolenz. And actually, tonight I just got done playing, so.
Oh, okay, so you can trace it back to the Monkees and Mickey Dolenz being your inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I watched them as a kid, you know, they were funny. And then it's amazing, you know, growing up, 50 years later, you know, the things you find out about them,
yeah.
You know, like Michael Nesmith discovering Hulk Hogan and he was in Elf and Parts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, his mother inventing whiteout and things like that.
Yeah. Liquid paper was invented by his mother, Mike Nesmith's mother.
Yes. His mother.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Well, that's cool. Thanks for the story, Dave. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
Okay. He started playing drums because of the Monkees. We got some texts here. We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 630 texts in. I didn't realize how much the Monkees meant to me until Davy Jones and then later Peter Tork passed away. Yeah, that made me, I was so sad. 773 texts in, greetings from Puerto Rico. All right. Mickey is the best. 847 said, Jeff from Mundelein says, didn't Charles Manson audition for the Monkees? Is that an urban legend or did that really happen? Charlie Manson auditioned for the Monkees.
I'm going to do a little half-assed internet research and give you an answer.
They didn't include that in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, you know what? That actually would have been a great deleted scene.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's him hanging out with Davy Jones.
Right.
He's just talking about, like, there's going to be a war, man.
Yeah. Here's Eileen on WGN. Hi, Eileen.
Hey. I'm gonna buy me a dog, cause I need a friend now. How now, brown cow? Gonna buy me a dog, cause I need a friend now. Oh, woo, woo, woo. Yeah, Mickey.
Yeah,
there you go.
What a great performance there, Eileen.
Thank you, but I loved it. Did you see that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that was one of my favorites. And then you got all the dogs and Mickey, you know, how now, brown cow?
Yeah.
And it was great. It was kind of fun to hear about the Monkees because I do have some of their greatest hits. But Head kind of like just, you know, that was like a past me.
Yeah, I understand.
Everything else, it was fun. And I just love those videos. And I had a blast when I watched them.
Yeah, it was such a great show. It was so much fun. Thanks, Eileen. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
All right, look at that.
All right, I do
We get serenaded by a listener.
She did it on the phone, too.
She did. It's beautiful.
You know, she got some practice. I will say, checking up on that claim that Charles Manson was one of the 437 applicants who tried out for the Monkees in 1965, Snopes.com, fantastic fact-checking site.
Yeah, Snopes. That's where you want to go if you want to get stuff debunked.
False.
It's false.
It's apocryphal. It's not real.
Okay. Well, I always trust Snopes. I always trust Snopes. It's a great website. Okay, so it's not true. Charles Manson did not audition for the Monkees, but over the years, of course, these things just snowball, these rumors and these stories. We're celebrating the Monkees, which was greenlit on this date in 1966, or 65. And here is Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland. I've heard that two people who did audition for the Monkees were Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night and Stephen Stills.
Yeah,
who
we were just
wound up recommending Peter Tork.
Yeah, we just talked about that with.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, the thing I love most about the Monkees is the incredible artistic evolution they underwent. They were the first boy band, but then they did Head, and they did all these great psychedelic albums like Headquarters and Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorns, and Jones Limited.
Yeah.
And I would love to see One Direction or Backstreet Boys even try to match that.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really amazing, and I agree with you, Mark, about that artistic evolution that they went through, because it started out as just like a package. You know,
yeah.
And they weren't musicians. They didn't do it. And then they became so popular and experimental, and they made great music. And it was fun. You know, I was very, very young when this happened. You know, I was a baby when it first started. But I watched the reruns when I was a little kid of the Monkees, and to see how they changed is really fascinating, to go back and see how they changed.
Yeah, I mean, they actually wrested control of their own music away from Don Kirshner. You got to respect that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a fan. So, all right, Mark, thank you.
And one more thing. I can't believe that they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but ABBA is.
Let's not get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame conversation again.
Sorry about that.
That's okay, Mark.
Talk to you next time.
Okay, buddy.
Happy New Year.
All right, take care. Yeah, I heard earlier... Justin was talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on his show, mm-hmm. and like who's not in and who isn't in. I mean, that's a conversation that can go on for hours and hours and hours, just being angry about who's not nominated or not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I gotta say this, the disrespect for ABBA on this show is shocking. I get it, people hate disco or whatever you
want. Oh, I love disco.
But you hate ABBA?
I hate ABBA.
Oh, you just don't like them because they're Swedish.
It has nothing to do with it.
They gave us that furniture that you can build
at home. I wanted to blow my brains out when I was sitting through Mamma Mia.
No, that's a terrible movie.
Yeah, both of them.
But ABBA's great.
Oh. I know I'm in the minority on that, and I think Mark from Cleveland is also in the minority. I think a lot, I mean, listen. People love ABBA. There's just no question about it. People love them. And everybody thinks Dancing Queen is like the greatest song of all time.
It is like the perfect pop song.
But it's. I will say this. Here's what I'll say about ABBA. Their music is exquisitely produced. I mean, seriously. Like that. I don't like it, but it's unbelievably well produced. Like, it's gorgeous sounding stuff. And so I would, you know, like, it's like that. That kind of production is great, and like I think Pyromania and Hysteria by Def Leppard are two of the greatest with John Mutt Lange. But I will say that about ABBA. Their music sounds pristine. The production is amazing.
I appreciate that.
All right. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we are here until 4 a.m., and Tom Hush is my producer, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. The show continues as we talk about the Monkees. Here's Joe on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Oh, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
Big fan of the Monkees. Just calling in on those guys.
Yeah.
Been a big fan many years. Got to meet all the guys.
Oh, cool.
Got multiple times got to meet them. Probably Davy Jones over 30 times. Mickey Dolenz maybe 30 times.
Yeah.
just super nice guys. Really cool. Great to hang out with. Awesome with their fans.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, when you spend time with them, you know, it was really a cool experience. They treated their fans very well. You know, even Mike Nesmith, quiet guy, you know, but
yeah.
Very nice. You know, they loved doing what they did, and they loved you know, hanging out with their fans.
Yeah.
You know, and,
well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear, Joe. That they were nice guys. It's you know, we always like to hear that. You know, that people that we admire turn out to be nice people. That's cool, Joe. Thank you for the call. So I've got some things that you might not know about the Monkees. Here's the first one: Davy Jones didn't know who the Beatles were the night of their shared Ed Sullivan Show performance. 2.5 years before the Monkees premiered, English heartthrob and tambourine player extraordinaire Davy Jones. Had his first brush with the four Mop Tops, who, unbeknownst to him, would change his life forever. He was a cast member. Have you seen this footage, by the way, of Davy Jones in? Because he was in Oliver. He played the Artful Dodger.
No, really?
Oh yeah. And they perform on the same night that the Beatles were on.
Oh,
they perform.
Wow.
So Davy Jones was performing as the Artful Dodger on the night that the Beatles performed. It's great footage. Davy Jones was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, at that time. Jones just happened to be performing on the same historic Ed Sullivan Show broadcast featuring the Beatles, but probably the craziest part of the story is how the 19-year-old Brit was completely oblivious to who John, Paul, George, and Ringo were. He tells a story in an interview. The late Monkey, who died in 2012, had never heard of the Beatles songs. He only took interest in what they were doing because he wanted to figure out how to make girls scream, too. So the original Monkees casting call was riddled with hippie-ish references. The creators of the Monkees TV show, Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, knew exactly the kind of guys that they wanted for their new series, so the ad they took out on September 8th, 1965 edition of Variety had to reflect the attitudes of the burgeoning youth culture. In the ad, quote, spirited Ben Franks types are requested. According to the book Monkey Business, the revolutionary made-for-TV band, Ben Franks was a popular Sunset Strip restaurant where the mods mused over burgers and fries, or as Davy Jones called them, long-haired beatnik weirdos. The ad also included the line, must come down for interview, per Rafelson in Monkey Business. That was a sly reference to being high. So, there you go. All right, we're going to continue. I want to hear from you guys. We got more facts about the Monkees. The anniversary of it being greenlit by NBC in 1966 happened today. 312-981-7200, talk and text, more Monkey talk coming up right here as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. Favorite Monkey song, like by far my favorite Monkey song, and I love a lot of Monkey songs, but that song is beautiful. You know, Neil Diamond wrote a bunch of Monkey songs.
Yeah, didn't he write I'm a Believer?
He wrote I'm a Believer. Yeah, he did. I mean, they had a batch of songwriters, and Neil Diamond was among the ones who wrote the songs. It's Nick DiGilio here as we continue on this Friday morning. All the regular Friday features coming up later on. We're going to talk about Richard Pryor. There was a big documentary last night on ABC. 2-hour documentary, so we're going to talk about Pryor and then talk about great stand-up comedians as well. And 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Monkees on this date in 1966, or 65, actually. NBC greenlit the Monkees, and years later, we still love them. We got some texts coming in. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you. 262, Monkees were the best. Saw them in the 80s when they were on tour. Great show. So much energy. Very giving to the audience. I'm a Believer is my favorite. That's a great song. But yeah, I mean, that resurgence in popularity of the Monkees in the 80s was massive.
Was it just because they were on, you said it was on MTV, right?
They showed reruns on MTV. And
they just happened to be like, you know what, we can get the Monkees for cheap or something like
that. Yeah, and they just started showing Monkees reruns on MTV. And, all the teenagers at that time, this was like in 1984, 85, something like that. And all the teenagers at that time had no idea who the Monkees were,
And certainly not representative of the music of today, of that day.
Absolutely. Like, you would see New Wave videos and then there'd be Monkees on MTV, and people went nuts, and their records started to climb up the charts again. And so then they were like, wow, okay, well, let's tour. Nesmith is the only one who didn't tour. He didn't go, but the other three did get on tour, and they were sold out all over the place. It sold out all over the place. And then finally, like a few years later, Nesmith did join back. He didn't want to go back to do the Monkey stuff because he was doing his own thing,
And was this before or after the invention of liquid paper?
It was way after the invention of liquid paper. But, he was experimenting in film at that time. Mike Nesmith was, and he was doing his own thing and his own music, and he didn't want to go back for, like, nostalgic reasons. But eventually he changed his mind.
Was Nesmith the sort of, ringleader behind the change to more psychedelic stuff?
I would imagine so. Imagine that he was a lot of people maintain that, you look back, Nesmith was the most serious of the musicians in the band. Like, he was a serious musician. He took it very seriously. And wasn't as crazy about the slapsticky, wacky comedy that they did on the show. And was the most serious of the four guys in the band, the most serious about music was Nesmith. So that's one of the reasons why he didn't go back for that big tour. But it was insane. I mean, I knew the Monkees from when I was a little kid. And so when people like who were 14 years old back in 1985 were suddenly loving on the Monkees, I was like, what is happening?
They had Monkees lunchboxes.
It was crazy.
T-shirts.
708 texts in, Nick, you've mentioned it before, but I'm shocked that you like the Monkees. I never would have guessed. Why? Why would somebody be shocked that I like the Monkees?
Don't forget his predilection for anything that a 14-year-old
well,
girl would enjoy.
That's right. Speaking of things that 14-year-old girls enjoy, you know, Gossip Girl, Blake Lively?
Yeah.
You seen the trailer for her new movie?
I have seen it. I'm interested.
Oh, man. Serena killing people.
Yeah.
And fighting.
Yeah.
Interesting casting there. You would never see, you know, Blake Lively. I would never see Blake Lively as like kind of a, you know, a La Femme Nikita thing. But I'm all for it. Did you see that movie where she was with the shark?
Oh, yeah, I didn't like it.
What?
I didn't like 47 Meters Down.
No, it's called The Shallows.
Oh, The Shallows. Oh, yeah, because she's a surfer and she, like, breaks her leg. And I don't know. I just, I wouldn't put it up. I mean, it's not Sharktopus bad, but it's not exactly
the
great pantheon of shark
movies. I liked it. And you get to see a lot of Blake Lively in a bikini. So right there.
I mean,
that's
I understand.
That's a plus.
That's in the pro category.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Okay. That's Nick DiGilio here on the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is my producer, and we are here till 4 with you, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Monkees. Mike Nesmith, here's in case you didn't know this, and you were just talking about this. This alludes to what you were talking about, Tom. Was Mike Nesmith the guy who was in, you know, instrumental in getting them to do more psychedelic and challenging things? Michael Nesmith attended the celebrity-filled recording session for the Sgt. Pepper song A Day in the Life. John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, Marianne Faithfull, Donovan, and Mike Nesmith of the Monkees. It sounds like a round of which of these things are not like the other, but the Texas guitarist was indeed there among the cream of the crop of British music in February of 1967. He appears at around 2 minutes and 26 seconds in the promotional video of A Day in the Life clip. If you have a steady hand, it's possible to pause the video right when he shows up, but you have to look sharp, as it is a quintessential blink and you'll miss him moment. I'm sure that had an effect. You know,
no doubt.
The Monkees managed to squeeze in subversive behavior whenever they could. In the season 2 episode, The Devil and Peter Tork, the boys took on the issue of censorship by slipping in a subversive joke about how back in 1967, you couldn't say the word hell on network television. This episode was a point of controversy between the Monkees production crew and the network, said Tork in DVD commentary. The bit, which starts out at 9 minutes and 50 seconds, has the boy talking about hell. Tork's character sold his soul to the devil and getting beeped every time they utter the word. This leads Mickey to observe, you know what's even more crazy? You can't say hell on television. Yes, hell was bleeped as he said it. This bit, quote, annoyed the daylights out of NBC, according to Tork. Dolenz also devotes a paragraph of this incident in his book, I'm a Believer, My Life of the Monkees, Music, and Madness. I remember that episode. I totally remember that episode. The Monkey Mania of the Monkees in Paris episode was staged. In June of 1967, the Monkees headed off to Paris for a season 2 episode that would show them being mobbed by French fans. Whether it was because the series hadn't started airing in France or French audiences just hadn't caught on to the craze yet, the truth is murky. A 1967 article says the show was on at that time. Monkey Business says it wasn't. Director Bob Rafelson had to get creative with the squealing girls. The cinema verite style of Monkees in Paradise episode is thus described in Monkey Business as the episode that features the Monkees pretending to run from their non-existent French fans.
Bob Rafelson.
Yeah.
He was behind Easy Rider.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was behind a lot of, you know,
60s counterculture.
Experimental counterculture films, which is why it's really weird that his name is. I always find it really strange when I see Bob Rafelson's name on an episode at the end of the month. That's the end of the Monkees.
Hey, you got to get your start somewhere.
No. And it was a huge success. We can thank him for that.
Yeah. Thanks him. We have 5 easy pieces.
Yeah. If you want to jump in, we're here. It's Nick DiGilio and Tom Hush, my producer, 312-981-7200, talking about the Monkees. 724 texts in, while nobody can deny their overall impact and influence of their hits, not enough for their work features the input out of all 4. So why aren't they in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Now we bring up the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame again.
That's a can of worms.
773 said, my first concert, 15 years old, front row at the Monkees, November 1986 in La Crosse, Wisconsin. It's one of their stops of the 20th anniversary reunion tour. I'm telling you, man, that tour was massive. It was massive. 779 says, before I was born, but I love their music, with a little heart emoji. 630 texts in, some of us had our parents' albums to listen to. Last Train to Clarksville was my friend's and our favorite, right between Madonna and Prince on the record player. Again, that mid-80s resurgent. Obviously, if you're listening to Madonna and Prince and the Monkees, it's the mid-80s. So, two Monkees stepped behind the camera during the show's run. Toward the end of the second and final season, Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz were given the opportunity to direct an episode. Tork, using his full name in the credits, Peter H. Thorkelson, directed The Monkees Mind Their Manor, which aired in February of 1968. Dolenz helmed Majako, a.k.a. the Frodis Caper, which also ended up being the series finale. The Monkees would officially be canceled later that year. So, all right, more Monkees. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, and we continue on WGN. Monkees. The Monkees. Nick DiGilio continues here. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is our producer, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And we're talking about the Monkees. This is the anniversary of when NBC greenlit the Monkees. And, boy, we're getting a lot of people. A lot of people like the Monkees, we're discovering. Getting a lot of tons of phone calls and a bunch of texts. People like the Monkees. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, it seemed like the Monkees never got much respect from movie critics or music critics or, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think it's mainly because of the way they were created. They're almost fitted like kings who were bastards back in medieval times or something.
Yeah.
And really what you should... based on an appreciation for it would be what they came out with. Some of their songs are pretty solid, even as far as social comment, like one they used at the close of their show, Only Shades of Grey.
Right.
About today there is no black and white, or Pleasant Valley Sunday here in the status symbol and condemned suburbia. Last Train to Clarkson, like, I didn't even really understand what that was about till just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And they found out Clarksville actually was a military base off in the last stop before guys got sent to Vietnam War.
That's right. Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm with you, Dave. They don't get the respect that they have. I think over the years they have. I think I think over the years, in retrospect, people look back and go, you know what, these guys were really good. And I like that there's like a retro love for the Monkees. So.
A retro love.
Yeah.
Michael Smith, actually, before the Monkees, Michael Smith wrote A Different Drama. It came a big hit for Linda Ronstadt.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Okay, Dave, thank you. All right. The series' unofficial finale features not one but two Beatles tunes. The Mickey Dolenz-directed episode opens up with a real bang, the intro to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band track, Good Morning, Good Morning. It was in Dolan's words, a big moment, mainly because, as he also mentions, it was the first time, to my knowledge, that the Beatles ever let one of their songs on another show. And anyone who remembers the Tomorrow Never Knows episode of Mad Men's fifth season is well aware that getting a Beatles song for your TV series is no small feat. The choice of Good Morning, Good Morning also had special meaning for Dolenz, who had the rare opportunities to hear an early version of that track at a visit to the Beatles studio at Abbey Road in 67. In addition, there are two instances where, if you listen closely, Davy Jones is singing the Beatles' Hello Goodbye to himself. That's pretty cool. Makes me want to go back and watch that episode. 847 texts in on June 14th, 18, at the Copernicus Center in Chicago. There was a great Monkees, that was featuring the Mike and Mickey show. It was great, and it included family members. You know, the Copernicus Center is right around the corner from the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember George Karzis, who runs the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet, And he's a good friend and a great restaurateur and an awesome host. And by the way, the place rules. He went and said it was great. 630 says they had they each had their own personality, and I think that's why the show went, why it worked, and I like them all in their own way, but Peter was the one I liked the best. That's Scott from Streamwood. You have a favorite monkey?
Probably Nesmith.
Yeah.
Because when I saw Head, mm-hmm. when I saw that movie, I freaked out. I was like, whoa. I didn't know that movies could be made like that.
Yeah.
And they would still have any sort of meaning to them.
Yeah.
And actually, I liked it way more than I ever liked any of the Beatles movies.
Yeah. Well, Hard Day's Night is great. Hard Day's Night's a great film.
Is that the one with the skiing?
No, that's Help.
Oh, that's Help.
Yeah.
No, Hard Day's Night is...
I love Help, too. I think Help is great.
Yeah, Help is in color, right?
Help is in color, and then Hard Day's Night is black and white.
Yeah. I guess I didn't... I came to appreciate Hard Day's Night later.
Yeah.
Because I don't think... I saw it so young that I don't think I appreciated the humor of it.
Yeah.
Because it really is super funny.
It's very funny.
It's very, very funny. But when I saw Head, I was just, like, blown away by the colors and everything. It was beyond... just like, look, it's the Beatles making really good, really funny jokes and playing good music. I was like, this is an experience.
All right. 847. I remember walking linking arms with my sister and doing the monkeys walk down the street, the legs in unison, marching and laughing and singing. At my my graduation show from Second City, we did a scene that took place on a ladies' night in a bar. And I was teamed up with one of my cast members, and we did the monkeys. We walked in and did the monkey, the leg thing. That was how we made our entrance. 630 says, I wrote to Davy Jones when I was 9, 1967. You know what? He never wrote me back. I'm sure he had a lot of letters. 1967, you write Davy Jones a letter. He's got a lot on his desk. How about this? There was a very weird Monkees episode where Frank Zappa showed up.
Ooh.
It was the 60s. The Monkees was winding down, and Michael Nesmith, according to Randy L. Massengill in her book Total Control, The Michael Nesmith Story, was trying to, quote, show the rock community that he was not just a kiddie show guy. Nesmith achieved this by not only bringing the Mothers of Invention frontman Frank Zappa onto the Monkees, but by also conducting a bizarre interview with him in which the two men switched roles. It's hard to know which is what's more disturbing. Frank Zappa in a Monkees double down blue shirt and Nesmith's signature green wool hat, or Mike Nesmith donning the Zappa-esque wig and fake nose, which keeps falling off during the bit. How about this? The Monkees outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones in 1967.
Wow. That's weird to think about.
Yeah. Yes, you read that correctly. In 1967, the year that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Between the Buttons and Their Satanic Majesty's Request, the Monkees outsold the Beatles and the Rolling Stones combined, probably because their British band had a hit TV show on its hands. Pretty impressive considering, at least in the beginning, as discussed at length in Monkey Business, the book, the Monkees were a manufactured group whose only contributions to the records were their voices. How about this one? Another fact, Liberace once made a strange uncredited cameo on a Monkees episode using the same golden sledgehammer as Frank Zappa. The renowned pianist Liberace was never known for being subtle, so when he showed up on the Monkees Season 2 episode, Art for Monkees' Sake, a flashy performance was a given, but what people didn't expect was to see the famed entertainer holding a golden sledgehammer to his piano, taking a golden sledgehammer to his piano. One could argue this possibly inspired the aforementioned Frank Zappa appearance later in the season, in which Zappa proceeded to destroy a car with a golden sledgehammer, the same one. And it doesn't seem like a coincidence that Michael Nesmith appeared in both bits. And then finally, the title of Mickey Dolenz's penned tune, Randy Scouse Git, was deemed so offensive in Britain that it had to be renamed. Mickey Dolenz wrote his first Monkees tune, Randy Scouse Git, for the third album, Headquarters, which he describes in his book, I'm a Believer, as all the experiences in England in 1967 that he had. Trouble was that even though the title sounds tame to us Yanks, over in Britain, it is directly translated, according to Dolenz, to horny Liverpudlian jerk. for the song's UK release, the drummer chose Alternative Title as its alternative title. And the track still made it to number two in the British charts.
I love that song, yeah. Randy Scouse Git.
It's a great song.
And it doesn't surprise me that that it would get censored.
Yeah.
In a sense, censored.
My favorite monkey, if I had to choose, is Mickey. I think he's...
Mickey Dolenz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kind
of a wild child.
I got to go Mickey Dolenz. One, because I think he's the funniest of all the monkeys. Like, on the show, he was always my favorite. Like, on the show, he cracked me up. I like all the monkeys, but I think my favorite is Mickey because of the show. Because he's just so funny on the show. And he's got a good voice, too. I love the songs that he sings. Okay, so we've got some songs here. How about For Pete's Sake from Headquarters? Peter Tork wrote it, and it's an ode to the right before the Summer of Love kicked in. We got a little bit of that?
Yeah. It's in everything we do.
Played during every episode during the final credits. Great song. How about this? Next one that they say is a great song is I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. I mean, please. That's from the album More of the Monkees, 1967. It's a fantastic song. Listen to that organ. That's 1967, man.
I'm not your stepping stone. I'm not your stepping
yeah.
stone.
How about this? Mike Nesmith's song, Circle Sky from Head, which was featured in a Head film via live performance. So, yeah. Do we have that? Yeah. Great song, man.
Well, and honestly, you can hear kind of like the beginnings of punk.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It's a very, very edgy. It's a very, yeah. very edgy song, especially for that time period. All right, really quickly, we'll go through the rest of these. You and I from Instant Replay. Daily Nightly from Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones Limited. Pleasant Valley Sunday. Valerie, another, man, great song. The Porpoise song from Head.
Yes.
Daydream Believer. And I'm a Believer is the one that they put on top as the best monkey song. I still love Daydream Believer is my favorite. So, okay, we got the news as we continue. And that's coming up next as part of the Nick DiGilio Show on this Friday morning. Not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Just want to mention that. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio. I hope you are well. We are continuing here live in the Skyline Studio on a Friday morning. Tom Hush is my producer, and I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. We've got our regular Friday features coming up after 3 o'clock. We're not doing a Vic's Picks this week. Vic has taken the week off, needs a little break, but it will return next week. So the regular features will begin at 3 instead of 2:30. Because there's no Vic's pick this morning. But we've got You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and of course, Fly Jams Friday, where we've already got a bunch of requests, right, Tom?
Yeah, they're coming in like crazy. So okay. If you want to get in on this, now is the time.
312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So we also want to hear from you. Who do you think are the funniest stand-ups? Who makes you laugh? What makes you laugh? The reason I bring this up is because at home waiting for me is this 2-hour documentary that was on ABC last night about Richard Pryor, and I'm very excited to watch it. He I think he was the funniest man that ever lived. And I think he's the greatest stand-up comedian that has ever been on a stage and stood in front of a microphone. He poured his heart and soul out in front of people. You know, talking about his foibles and his problems and his personal life and his addictions in a beautifully funny and profane way. Nobody swore like Richard Pryor, and it all worked. Like, his words, he selected those words purposefully. You know, as profane as he was emotional, and it was beautiful and absolutely hilarious. It's hard to find anything, you know, any bits that we can play on the air, Richard Pryor, without having to hear, you know, a beep every 2 seconds. But I was lucky enough. I got to see Richard Pryor, and it was amazing. And his concert films, the 3 concert films that he made Richard Pryor Live in Concert, Richard Pryor Live on the Sunset Strip, and Richard Pryor Here and Now are legendary. Especially the first one, the first Richard Pryor concert film from 1978, I think is the best documented stand up routine I've ever seen that's ever been done. The command that he has over the audience, and the material is so strong, and his delivery, everything about the first concert movie is amazing. And Live from the Sunset Strip is a legendary one too, because that's the first one, that's the first performance that he did after his burning accident, after the whole thing where everybody thought he was going to die, and so it's this triumphant return to the stage. It's weird. I don't know, Tom, if you know this or not. Have you seen Live on Sunset Strip?
I have, yeah.
It's great, but the first one's the best. I still maintain the 1978 Richard Pryor Live in Concert is the greatest stand-up, the greatest 90 minutes of stand-up that's ever been filmed. But in Sunset Strip, it was a 2-night performance. He was 2 nights. And he completely bombed the first night. Like, he was nervous. He couldn't get through it. And, you know, like, all this stuff about him, you know, he hadn't been in front of a crowd in a long time, and he had gone through this life-changing, you know, event where he almost died. I mean, it was a suicide attempt is what you find out later. But he couldn't do it. The first night, he tanked. And so, normally, when you make a concert movie, they usually do it over the course of a couple of, like, any kind of, like, comedy special that you see, a stand-up special that you see. It's usually 2 performances that they, you know, that they will cut together. So if you see, you know, like, let's say you go to the Vic and you're watching somebody that they're about to film a concert or an HBO special or a Showtime special or something. If you go both nights, they will wear the same clothes. Like, the comedian will wear the same clothes because they want to cut between when the jokes hit better, because they want the best material possible. So they do it over the course of 2 nights because some audiences don't react as well. But so that was going to be the case with Live on Sunset Strip. They were going to cut between the 2 performances. But he only had that 1 performance to choose from. And that's what they used in, Sunset Strip. But yeah, I can't really explain how much I love Richard Pryor. You know, his movies were never as great as his stand-up. He made a lot of stupid movies. I'd be the first to admit that. He did make a lot of stupid films. And they were never as funny as he was. I think the funniest movie that Richard Pryor ever made is Which Way Is Up, where he plays 3 different roles. And the 3 roles are, you know, based on characters that he creates for his stand-up. And that's another thing that he does. He does all these great characters on stage and becomes them. Like, he was a great actor, not just a brilliant, you know, comedian, but he's a great actor. And so, but the only movie that he ever made, which is not a comedy, which is by far the best thing he's ever done and the best performance he's ever given, is in Paul Schrader's Blue Collar. And it's not a comedy. I mean, that kind of shows you that he really could act. I like the movie JoJo Dancer that he wrote and directed, which is autobiographical. I thought JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling was good. A lot of people didn't like it. I thought it was good. But again, on the movie side, a lot of them were just not very funny. And not nearly as funny as he was capable of being when he was on stage with his own material, just killing it. So, who do you think is funny? 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. Who's your favorite stand-up comedian? Who makes you laugh? And we're going through all generations. It could be an older one, could be a newer one, newer stand-up. A lot of funny new stand-ups out there. Really, really funny. So, 312-981-7200. We got some text coming in. The phone lines are open. And I also have in front of me from Rolling Stone, the best stand-up comedians of all time, the 50 best stand-up comedians of all time. So we're talking comedy. We're talking stand-up comedy. Who's your favorite stand-up comedian? Who makes you laugh the most? The phone and text lines are open. 312-981-7200. The Nick DeGilio Show continues here on WGN. It's Nick DeGilio as we continue here on 720 WGN. It's the show. And we're here. We got news for you. We got the regular Friday features for you. And we're talking comedy right now. Tom Hush is the producer. I am the host, Nick DeGilio, here on 720 WGN. And we're talking about the best stand-up comics of all time. Who do you think deserves to be on this list? I have a Rolling Stone list here of the 50 best stand-up comedians of all time. Last night, ABC aired a two-hour special about Richard Pryor, and I immediately am going to watch it as soon as I get home in the morning. And I can't wait, because Richard Pryor was my favorite stand-up comedian. I think he's the funniest man that's ever lived, and I'm very excited to watch this documentary. Even though I know so much about him already, I pretty much know everything about him already. He wrote a book called Pryor Convictions from some years ago, and it was a memoir, and it was really, really great. But the thing about Richard Pryor is that he kind of opened up on stage all the time. Like, you knew everything about the guy because of his material. I mean, it was one of the stuff that he did was just like, it was like open heart surgery on himself in front of thousands of people. And I don't think anybody was funnier. So, but we're talking stand-up comedians. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Here's Tim on WGN. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, how are you?
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I agree with you with Richard Pryor. I really do. I can remember being in about, you know, sixth grade and watching those on VCR, you know, the VHS or the beta tapes.
Yeah.
Watching it, you know, late at night when we weren't supposed to be watching
yep.
it.
Yep.
Just, it was hysterical. It was great. But I do have to say, you know, Dave Chappelle is up there nowadays if you want to go current.
Yeah, no, Dave Chappelle is great. Dave Chappelle is absolutely brilliant and hilarious. There's no question about it.
I mean, but I will throw this out there. I did see Sebastian Maniscalco at the United Center, and I thought I was going to get sick because I was crying and laughing so hard. He was just out of control.
He's a funny guy. God, he played the United Center. That guy can sell out the United Center?
He sold out the United Center, and if you look it up, it's a record crowd that was ever, besides, I think, a hockey game, he's got the record for attendance.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I knew the guy was popular, but man, selling out the UC,
yes,
that's amazing.
Yes, sir. And what's good about him, and believe me, I don't care about the swearing with Pryor or Dave Chappelle or Eddie Murphy. I don't care. But the one thing, the art that Sebastian, he rarely swears.
Yeah.
Which is very, but he still has you laughing. You
yeah,
know?
No, I mean, I admire comedians who don't work blue. I mean, I think it's time. I did some stand up for a few years ago, and I would cut loose with the F bomb all the time.
Well, Sebastian's a hometown boy too. He's
yeah.
from Arlington Heights.
No.
That's where he's born and raised.
Yeah.
He told the story about working at the Olive Garden in Schaumburg. It was crazy.
yeah. All right, Tim. Thanks for the call.
All right, you got it, guys.
Right,
have a great morning.
There you go. Wow, selling out the UC. That's amazing. Get a big crowd like that. I remember seeing Steve Martin at the amphitheater. And it was very, very memorable. So we got texts flying in here. Who's funny to you? Who do you think is hilarious? Who do you think are the best stand-up comedians? What makes you laugh? 312-981-7200. And if you saw that ABC documentary last night about Richard Pryor, I would love to hear what you think. Don't give any details away, but I would like to hear what you thought. If you watched the Richard Pryor documentary on ABC last night. Text 630 says, all-time best comedian, hands down, George Carlin. He made you laugh, but he also made you think. That's Sue in Naperville. 815 says, right now, Bill Burr has no equal, genius and hilarious. I think Bill Burr is great. You like Bill Burr, Tom?
I get a lot of flack for this. Not particularly.
Really?
I get that he's incredibly successful. I think it's like the Monday Morning podcast or something like that. Incredibly successful. People love him. I just find his particular brand of attitude to be off-putting to me. He seems like a guy... I like comedians that I feel like I could maybe hang out with. Or would be like... I would like to be in an intimate situation with where... I'd be sitting a few feet from them, watching them tell jokes. I wouldn't want to be within 50 feet of Bill Burr because I feel like he would just straight up rail on me for literally anything.
Have you heard his rant against an audience where he was going to fill his time? Like he did 11 minutes of just like the audience hated him, but he does 11 minutes of just ripping the audience apart. It is hilarious, and but he refuses to leave the stage. Like I'm out here. I'm doing 11 minutes. I got 11 minutes, and I'm doing it.
Yeah, and I you know, from an outside perspective, I can see why that would be funny. Like listening to this guy just shred on the audience. But imagine if you were the audience.
Well, like just the audience was terrible. The reason he did it was because the audience were a bunch of a-holes. He dropped the material and just started ripping the audience apart. Like, he was doing his material, and they were drunk, and they were screaming, and they were morons.
Fair enough.
And
fair
so,
enough.
Like, it was this rant is against this terrible audience.
Then I give him props. Yeah. Then I give him props. And I don't think he's a bad guy. I don't think he's necessarily a bad comedian. He just doesn't appeal to
I totally
watch,
understand. Yeah. Like, for instance, a brilliant writer. I don't like his delivery. John Mulaney.
What?
I think he's a brilliant writer.
Boy,
I think he's a brilliant
writer. John Mulaney.
I can't stand his delivery, like that snobby sort of attitude that he has.
I think it's so
funny.
But his
material is great. I'm not. And he wrote some of the best sketches on Saturday Night Live. Yeah. He's the co-creator of
Documentary Now.
No. The Bill Hader character, Stefan.
Oh yeah, Stefan. Yeah.
You know, and all that stuff where Stefan breaks. That's all because Mulaney changes the jokes all the time. So, look, I got a lot. It's just there's something about his delivery where I just go, oh, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. But everybody's got their own, you know, some people just think people are, like, for instance, I don't get Stephen Wright.
Oh, yeah, because Super Sounds of the 70s?
Yeah, I don't get Stephen Wright. I don't get
really
it.
Really drawl. And...
I put spot remover on my dog, and he disappeared. You know.
See, I think that's pretty funny.
Well, but listen, I understand. People love Stephen Wright. Obviously, it's an objective thing. You know, comedy, not everybody laughs at the same stuff. That's what makes comedy so great.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? There's so much out there, so different. You know, so, like, I know people who can't stand Python. Which I find astonishing that anybody would not find Python funny.
Pretty sure my mom never really found Monty Python that funny.
My dad turned me on to Python.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching a crappy sitcom, and he was like, listen, Sunday night at 10:30, we're putting on Channel 11, and you're going to sit down in front of the TV, and you're going to watch it. And I did. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio. We're on the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is producing. We want to hear from you. The phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. What makes you laugh? What stand-up comedians do you think are the best? Nick, Ron White is hilarious from the 630. He says he just says things as he sees them. He can be raw, and he drinks heavily. But his wit is uncanny.
I will say, I think out of all the blue-collar comedy tour guys, Ron White is the clear winner.
Without question.
They call me Tater Salad.
Without question. although I gotta say, that show, that reality show, that comedy reality show where it was Chrissy Teigen, the great Kenan Thompson, and Jeff Foxworthy were the judges. Something about make me laugh. No, it's not make me laugh, but what is, I can't remember. It was a reality show where they had people come out, like, do stand up or just do, like, sketch comedy. And then they crowned a winner at the end, and the judges were Kenan Thompson, Chrissy Teigen for some unknown reason. And Jeff Foxworthy. I thought Jeff Foxworthy was brilliant on that show. He had great advice. His observations were great.
He clearly understands what he's doing, which
no
I appreciate.
No question about it.
I very much appreciate that. Even though I don't like his material, the man is an artist.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he's doing down to a T.
No, listen, I respect that guy a lot. And again, like I said, you know, like the whole you might be a redneck thing, I find tired. It's not my cup of tea. But watching him on that show and watching him give notes to comedians and people doing comedy and how much he cared about it, like really cared about it. I was like, this guy's great. If Nick hasn't stumbled onto Doug Stanhope, I highly recommend him, especially his early stuff. He used to do a segment for a BBC show called Newswipe, and it's probably the only thing that I could possibly be appropriate for radio. Not familiar with him. You familiar with Doug Stanhope?
I know of him.
Yeah.
I think he's got at least one special up on Netflix that I've been meaning to watch because it looks good.
I'm always curious about finding new comedians because I love comedy and I love stand up and I like to discover people that aren't necessarily popular.
Yeah.
773 says Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David hates stand up. He started out obviously as a stand up and then he ended up on the show Fridays, which was a Saturday Night Live ripoff. And then, but he hated stand-up. He hated it. He would go out there and he would do like a Bill Burr thing. Like if he didn't like the audience, he would just go. Because you know Larry David, that's his whole thing. Curb Your Enthusiasm back Sunday night. Oh, man. The stuff with him and Smoove.
J.B. Smoove.
Oh, my God. I mean, that just is legendarily funny stuff. He's funny as hell, too.
Yeah.
J.B. Smoove. He's a great stand-up, but he's brilliant on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And you can't, Jeff Garlin, another great stand-up.
Yeah, he was here earlier, I think. Yeah,
he was he was interviewed earlier. But I love Jeff Garlin. I love him. He called in the show.
Yeah, we listened to that not too long ago.
He called in the show one night, unprovoked. He called in, told the story about Kid Rock at Wrigley Field.
Hey, Jeff, if you're awake.
Yeah, if you're listening.
Phones are open.
Call in 312-981-7200. 815 area code. Oh, you're not going to like this one. For some reason, Tom hates Sinbad. Then 815 says my favorite was always Sinbad. I like Sinbad, man. We've talked about this before. I think Sinbad is funny as hell.
I understand.
And I love that he doesn't work blue.
And
it's not easy.
And that is respectable, and you're absolutely right. It is not easy to work blue.
To not work blue.
Or to not work blue. Yeah. Pardon me. But he does. He has worked blue in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
It's Always Sunny, yeah. But that was the joke.
Yeah.
Because he never ever worked blue.
It's the same thing with Wayne Brady.
Oh, like, my God. On the episode of Chappelle?
Yeah.
That is it's still one of my favorite things ever.
I remember people, he said that he got like physically ill having to say bitch.
Yeah.
Like he was.
Is Wayne Brady going to have to choke a bitch?
Yeah.
847 says Dave Attell. Dave Attell is funny. Dave Attell is one of those guys that you would describe as a comedian's comedian because comedians love Dave Attell. They love him. I think the biggest fans of Dave Attell are stand-ups. Yeah, Dave Attell, he falls under that.
He's a real comics comic.
He's exactly. Aaron in Waukegan said George Carlin was the best. Listen, I go with Pryor, but Carlin is right there. Carlin is right there. He was brilliant. And I noticed, I was noticing this when I was shaving the other day, I kind of look like George Carlin now when my hair gets a little bit longer. I kind of resemble George Carlin. I was like looking at it, and I was like, you know what? I could pass for George Carlin, and I think that's pretty cool.
If everybody didn't know that he was dead, he could be a George Carlin, impersonator.
I love the frenetic energy of Robin Williams. See, now there's another guy I didn't think was funny.
Adored him.
Yeah, no, everybody does. And I'm in the minority, and not to speak ill of the dead, I just didn't think the guy, it just wasn't my scene.
For sure.
Sam Kinison. Oh my God, Sam Kinison.
Didn't he used to be a preacher or something?
Yeah, he was a brimstone preacher. That's why he's like a maniac on stage.
Yeah, no wonder.
He toured around and you know, he was in tents. He had tents up. They would put up tents, you know, those things and he would speak. He was a brimstone and fire.
Did he bring out the snake too?
I don't know.
I love it.
Mitch Hedberg was Mitch Hedberg was funny. There's a tragedy right there. Again, Kinison, all these guys dead. Yeah. Everybody that Aaron mentioned, George Carlin, Robin Williams, Sam Kinison, Mitch Hedberg.
Didn't Mitch Hedberg, early on, he used to perform with his back to the audience.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And that's why he wore those rose glasses, those rose shades, because he was so embarrassed or, like, so shy.
All right, we'll continue here. 312-981-7200. We're getting some texts in. The phone lines are open, and we'll talk about the 50 best stand-up comics of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And I can't wait to see that documentary on Pryor when I get home. But the phone lines, text lines are open. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio, we are live, continuing here in the Skyline Studio. Tom Hush is producing, and I'm your host. We're talking stand-up comedy. We would love to hear from you. ABC aired a two-hour documentary about Richard Pryor last night. If you watch that, I'd like to hear what you thought of it. And he's my favorite stand-up comedian. I thought he was the funniest man that ever lived. But everybody has different opinions about what they think is funny. And we want to hear from you. What's funny to you? Who do you think are the best stand-ups? 312-981-7200. More texts are coming in. Phone lines are open. 219 texts in. Back in the day, Rodney Dangerfield. And currently, there is nobody better than Dave Chappelle. Rodney Dangerfield was amazing. Was amazing. And if you go back and watch the Johnny Carson show on Antenna TV, Antenna TV, by the way, shows Johnny Carson every night. And you should watch those. You should watch those classic episodes of the Tonight Show. You get to see him on Antenna TV every night, and you should watch them because they're brilliant. And it's so much fun to watch and go back and look at the old episodes. Rodney Dangerfield. Every single time, every appearance he ever made on The Tonight Show, he killed. Never once did he bomb or even underperform. He killed every single time. And the thing that people say about Rodney, first of all, he helped out a lot of comedians. You know, he had those HBO specs, how, you know, a lot of comedians got discovered through Rodney Dangerfield because he would go out and watch comedy and then, you know, support these young comedians. And he was a precise comedian. People talk about how every word, every pause, he would write material constantly. And I'm not kidding you. You watch Antenna TV when they show, you know, if you're looking on your menu and Antenna TV shows a Tonight Show, or if Rodney Dangerfield is listed as one of the guests, watch it. Because he absolutely destroys. What he does is he'll go up and do like his 5 minutes or whatever. When they introduce him, he comes out in front, does like 5 minutes. And then Johnny obviously calls him over to the couch. And then he basically just does 10 more minutes. You know what I mean? It's just, but he's sitting on the couch. You know, it's like Johnny just throwing him, you know, baiting him. And it's basically just another set. So he basically does two sets every time he appears on Carson's show. So look out on Antenna TV for the reruns and make sure you watch it when Rodney's on. Because he's never not spectacularly funny. I think we can play some Rodney from The Tonight Show on the air, obviously, because he does another guy that doesn't work blue. Let me take a phone call here from Doc. Hey, Doc.
Hey, man. Hey. Yeah, I was going to talk about Rodney. That's one guy I never did see, but they used to say he could do like 121 liners in 50 minutes.
No. He was, I mean, his material, the stuff that he did, he was the consummate comedian and so funny, so funny.
But I was going to say, when you're talking of the group of angry comedians that are dead, there's nobody better than Bill Hicks.
He was great.
And then, like, Rodney, you know, deals with his appearance. Another comedian that deals with his situation, Josh Blue. Okay. I think he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Leary.
I love Dennis Leary. I know a lot of people were angry with Dennis Leary when No Cure for Cancer came out because it was very similar to the kind of stuff that Bill Hicks was doing. And so I know a lot of people who were like, Dennis Leary ripped off Bill Hicks. I think Dennis Leary is great. I think he's great.
When he talks about going in just trying to get a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, and then, did you know Dennis Wolfberg?
Oh, yeah. Very funny.
Yeah, that's somebody that, for anybody that doesn't know him, he was a school teacher. He passed away from colon cancer.
Yeah.
And he kind of had frizzy hair and bug eyes. And he kind of sounded like Gilbert Gottfried.
He did.
But he did a bit on having a colonoscopy.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's had that scare and a precancerous polyp, you start with a sigmoidoscopy and a barium enema, then a colonoscopy. And I used to have a bunch of jokes that I'd made up that I'd tell to friends. And he tells that the nurse gives him a liquid Valium or something, leans over and says, "Sir, we're about to begin the procedure." And he says, "You want to call it a procedure? Anytime you're up my ass 12 inches, I'm calling it an operation." Could I tell you a quick story about comedians in general?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, I heard that this is how comedians think, that Steve Martin was in Des Moines, Iowa. He was about to go to bed for the night. He's in a boutique hotel. He's back in the lounge in a booth by himself with a bottle of wine. Woman goes up to him. She's wearing just a simple black dress. And she says, "Mr. Martin?" And he says, "Call me Steve. Sit down." And he says, "What's on your mind?" She says, "Well, my husband passed away 3 years ago, and tonight's the first night I've been out since he died. I just feel like I died that day. And my friend got me to go out tonight. And tonight's the first time I've laughed in 3 years. And it was just so fun. I felt like my husband was speaking to me saying, your life didn't end. It's time for you to have some fun and go out and enjoy yourself. And she goes, I want to thank you for that. In fact, nothing would please me more than to go up and accompany you to your room and do whatever it is you would find pleasing. And right then he sat his wine glass down on the table and leaned over and he said, wow, were you at the first or the second show?
That's great. That is a great story.
All right, man. Another great topic.
Take care, man.
All right.
That is fantastic. Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to, yeah, okay. We'll continue the show here, and we want to hear from you. Stand-up comedy is what we're talking about, some of the best stand-up comedians of all time. Let's play a little, let's hear it. We were just talking about Rodney Dangerfield, who obviously, if you're going to have a conversation about great stand-up comedy, you can't not talk about Rodney. And as I've said before, keep your eye on Antenna TV and watch those Johnny Carson reruns, because every single time Rodney appeared on Carson, he destroyed. We got a little bit of Rodney. Is this on for the Tonight Show?
What a crowd! Thank you, man. Now, I tell you, I'm all right now, but last week I was in rough shape, you know? I mean, the last week my wife, she signed me up for a bridge club. I jump off next Tuesday. I mean, last week was rough. Are you kidding? Last week I looked up my family tree. Two dogs were using it. Tell you, I can't relax, you know? Well, the other night I was in a place I felt like having a few drinks. I went over to the bartender. I said, surprise me. He showed me a naked picture of my wife. No, you're kidding. My wife is always something. Her father just died. She had his body frozen. Every time I take a snack, he falls out of the refrigerator. I mean, my wife can't do nothing right. Well, last week she cracked up the car. She went into a tree. She said it wasn't her fault. She blew the horn. Well, what a driver she is. Over the dashboard, there's a pair of shoes hanging. They belong to the last guy she hit. You're kidding. One night she went out, some guy stole the car. I said to her, did you see what he looked like? She told me she got the license plate number. I don't know. I tell you what, me, nothing comes easy. Well, last week I went to the track, they shut off the opening gun, they killed my horse. Now, last week I got stuck, too. I bought a new book, 100 Ways to Make Love. I ended up in Traction. It was a misprint.
I mean, come on, man. Just rapid fire. Bam, 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 bam. And then he goes over to the couch and he does it again. Bam, 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 bam. And Carson loses it every time he has Rodney on. Just loses it. That's great stuff. Okay, we're talking about that. It was funny as hell. We're talking about stand-up comedy. Who's your favorite? What makes you laugh? 312-981-7200 for talk and text here on 720 WGN as we continue the Nick DiGilio Show. Nick DiGilio, the show continues. We are live in the Skyline studio. I'm Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is your producer, and Vic Vaughn will be reporting on the news throughout the morning. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking stand-up comedy. Richard Pryor, they had a big two-hour documentary on ABC last night about Richard Pryor, and that's what we're talking about right now. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Who are your favorite stand-up comedians? Here's Dusty on WGN. Hi, Dusty.
Hi. The two guys I have to endorse are Brian Regan and Jim Gaffigan.
Both very funny guys.
Either of them starts a new show and goes on tour, I'll drive up to 300 miles or 400 miles south just to check them out. Because at the end of it, my face hurts even the next day.
Yeah, no, they're both really funny. I particularly like Jim Gaffigan. I think Jim Gaffigan is great. He's another guy that doesn't work blue.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they're both pretty clean.
Yeah, they both clean. Yeah, pretty clean. All right, Dusty. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right. Brian Regan, Jim Gaffigan. You like Jim Gaffigan, right? Yeah. Yeah. How can you not? 708 texts in. This is Tony from Blue Island. He says, Eddie Murphy had me with Delirious and Raw. cemented his status as one funny mofo in my book. For the life of me, I never got Emo Phillips or Judy Tenuta. I love both Judy Tenuta and Emo Phillips. I can understand why. You don't think they're funny. I can totally understand that. I think Emo Phillips and Judy Tenuta are both very funny, especially Emo. I just think Emo's hilarious. I've had him on the show. He's another guy who does not work blue. Emo Phillips does not work blue. Um, 815 says Dave Chappelle, Kevin Hart. Now there's a guy I don't understand. That's a guy. I mean, I know that he's incredibly popular. He's made a lot of hit movies and he can sell out stadiums. I just don't get Kevin Hart. I don't get it. Bert Kreischer. I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's relatively new.
Would I know him if I saw him?
Probably. He does this bit called The Machine where he talks about how he like he was voted by Rolling Stone when he was in college as like the number one partier either in the nation or at his school. I'm pretty sure he went to FSU. He went to Florida State University.
All right.
And he was like just a total party animal. And he does this bit, he does this comedy bit where he talks about how he earned this nickname called The Machine from a bunch of Russian mobsters or something like that.
What?
Yeah. He's got this, he performs stand up with his shirt off. He's got like a big beer gut. Like, it's not for me, but people seem to really like
him. Oh, okay. All right. 847 said, I recently found some Michael Winslow stand up.
Michael.
You know who Michael Winslow is?
Yeah, he does all the sound effects
from the Police Academy movie.
Yeah, and Spaceballs.
Yeah, no, that's right. He's in Spaceballs. The Sweeps
and the Creeps. That's the right. What, the what, and the what?
I was just watching a terrible episode of a terrible idea of the Hollywood Squares Match Game Hour with mid-80s celebrities. And Michael Winslow was in one of the squares. Hollywood Squares, and all he was doing was just making noises.
I will say it does make me laugh.
I'll tell you. I do. No, he's. I'm seriously. It's. He's very talented. I mean, you know. But he's in the Cheech and Chong movies, man, and that kills me in the Cheech and Chong movies. He ruffles through an imaginary duffel bag, finds a cat, later hits the imaginary cat with an imaginary grappling hook, and then gives the cat to the audience member. That's weird. Michael Winslow. I don't know if I could see a full set. You know what I mean? I don't know if I could see like a full 60-minute set of Michael Winslow.
Yeah.
I think I would grow tired of it after a while.
Yeah.
You know, after the 50th beep, I'd be like, all right. Hey, Nick, love you. Thank you. 847. I think Dave Chappelle and Joe Coy are the best. Joe Coy is very funny. Currently, and Eddie and Pryor were the old best. You know, Eddie said he's going to tour.
Really?
He's going to go back and do stand-up.
I hope he comes out in, like...
the leather outfit?
Yeah, but, like, double XL. Yeah. He's, you know, he's an older gentleman. He's not as fit as he was back in the day.
I'm trying to remember. Somebody said that they were going to tour with him. I don't know if it... Maybe it's Arsenio. They might, like, tour together. I can't remember, but he says he's going to go back out on the road and do stand-up again because he's got this renaissance thing happening because of Dolomite. Dolomite Is My Name. Huge comeback for him. He's doing Coming to America 2, and he said he wanted to get back out on the road and do some stand-up. So that would be interesting to see after how long he's not done it. Let's see. 815 says Burr trashed that Philly audience and he turned them because they cheered him at the end. Yeah, of course it was Philadelphia, right? Of course it was Philadelphia.
The city of brotherly love.
708 says Gabriel Iglesias, a.k.a. Fluffy. 847. Brian Regan is the best ever. My brother took me to one of his shows several years ago when I was going through a major depression. I hadn't laughed like that, like I did that night in many years. He kind of saved my life that night.
Oh, that's nice. Comedy can do that for you.
Oh, no question about it. 847, Rita Rudner and Gabriel Iglesias are my favorite. Rita Rudner is legendary. She's so funny. She's been around forever.
Am I funny to you?
So I got this list here of the 50 greatest stand-up comedians, and I want to go through it, and I want to hear more from you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Again, it's everybody has a different taste in comedy. But I would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Coming in at number 50, Wanda Sykes.
Love Wanda.
I love Wanda Sykes. She's so funny. I've loved her since the first time I saw her, and I thought she did a wonderful job when they did the All in the Family Good Times thing.
Yeah. She's the first time I saw her was on a show called The New Adventures of Old Christine.
Oh, sure.
Which is a pretty good show.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, a pretty good show.
Yeah.
But I think the funniest thing I've ever seen her do is the scene in Clerks.
Oh.
Which I will never repeat in public.
Yeah.
But Clerks 2 is just absolutely insane.
It's great. Her best special from 2009 is I'ma Be Me. And it's really funny. She started out, she started out as a writer on the Chris Rock show.
That's
how she started out. She's in the writer's room in the Chris Rock show. And then Chris Rock encouraged her to step out of the writer's room and get behind the mic and do some stand up. And she took his advice but she's hilarious. She's just hilarious. Always has been. She's really, not only is she a great stand up, but she's really funny in movies. And sometimes, because she's made some pretty stupid movies. But sometimes she is indeed the best thing about movies. But I think she's great. I think her material is great. And I think I always, always find her funny. Always. Next, 49 is Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
Yep, he's funny as hell.
I saw him. We used to have every year, we would have comedians come to Loyola when I went to Loyola.
Yeah.
And Aziz was there one year. He did a really good job.
He's great.
But I don't think he'll be on there, but Mike Birbiglia.
He's great.
But because he's so much more than just a stand-up comedy.
Well, yeah.
He's like really doing more of a one-man show.
A great filmmaker.
Yeah.
I love Mike Birbiglia. I think he's got such a great view on life, and I think the movies that he's written and directed he's done two, I think.
Yeah, he did Sleepwalk with Me, and then he did the one about improv.
Right. Both of them are, with Keegan-Michael Key.
Yeah.
And Gillian, what's her name from?
Jacobs?
Gillian Jacobs, yeah, from Community. That's a really good movie. Having done the improv thing, that is as accurate as a portrayal of being in an improv group as you can possibly imagine.
It's very uncomfortable.
Like, I was watching it, and I'm going, yeah, I've done that. I've been there. I've said that. You did improv for a while, right?
Well, I was in, like, high school. I was on the improv team.
That was
the closest thing I could get to being on a team of any sort.
What's the name of that movie?
It's something... It's something to the effect of... It's not safe to not guaranteed. That's different.
No, that's different. We'll look it up. Sleepwalk with Me is also a wonderful movie. But that movie that Birbiglia made about improv...
Don't Think Twice. Chris Gethard.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Kate Mucci.
Oh, she's so funny. I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really terrific show. Terrific movie. Nick DiGilio, that's me, and we're talking about stand-up comedy. And Rolling Stone put together a list of the 50 best stand-up comedians. We're going to go through that and talk about these comedians, and we want to hear from you. Who makes you laugh? Who do you think is funny? Text or call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, Tom Hush producing. One more comedian here. Coming in at 48, Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Opened the door for not only just women, but Asian women.
Mm-hmm.
Always thought her stand-up was great. Didn't like her TV show very much. But every time she comes back and gets on stage and does some stand-up, it's always good. One of the biggest influences, by the way, Patty Vasquez. Patty Vasquez, one of the reasons why she started doing stand-up is because she was inspired by Margaret Cho.
Yeah, because, I mean, Margaret, if I'm not mistaken, she used to be a sex worker, correct?
She did.
And, you know, she just decided to want to do... It shows how much comedy can change someone's life if they feel they've got a story to tell and a perspective.
No question.
It's really something else.
Yeah. All right. We're going to continue talking about stand-up comedy. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 as the Nick DiGilio Show rolls on. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. It's Nick DiGilio. We continue. It's here until 4 a.m. The regular Friday features will happen after 3, and then we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Tom Hush is the producer here, and we're with you till 4, keeping you company. And we'll do all of our regular features straight out of context. Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. Requests are flying in, so Luscious Hushes is going to be spinning some funky discs. Later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about stand-up comedy. Last night, ABC aired a two-hour documentary about Richard Pryor. And so I can't wait to get home to watch it. And we wanted to find out from you, who makes you laugh? Who are your favorite stand-ups? And we got a Rolling Stone list of great stand-up comedians. 815 area code says, going old school, Bob Newhart and his surprising best friend Don Rickles. Weird that such opposites were best buddies. Yeah, they were best buddies. Hung out all the time, and which is and they're both very funny. Don Rickles was just ridiculously funny. Another guy who killed every time he was on Johnny Carson, every single time.
Well, and I love his. My favorite thing he ever did was when he was on with Frank Sinatra.
Oh,
Bumbani Umbatso.
Yeah, it's that's great stuff. Just great. 816 says, Nick, nobody has mentioned Dice, who sold out Madison Square Garden before anyone. I happen to be a fan of Andrew Dice Clay. I think Andrew Dice Clay is funny. We should show some love for Carson, who was very funny, even when a couple of jokes would bomb. Listen, it's awesome when he's doing his monologue and the jokes bomb. It's my favorite part is when Johnny Carson bombs during the monologue. His reaction is brilliant. It is hilarious every time. And again, you need to be watching Antenna TV for these reruns of The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Show, because they're gold. They're gold. And he, no, seriously, that's the best part. His monologues are usually funny, but when he tanks, it's hysterical. 312, Louis Anderson. Never really liked Louis Anderson except on Baskets. And I love him on Baskets. David Letterman. Boy, you're going old school. Letterman was, I love David Letterman. He's one of my heroes. Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock. And 847 says, two of my favorites to watch are Trevor Noah and Eddie Izzard. I love Trevor Noah. I adore Trevor Noah. And I watch The Daily Show every day. And I think he's great.
Eddie Izzard. He's changed me.
Well, he's brilliant.
He's the real, he's the lost Python, really.
Yeah.
Because he was just a little bit younger than those guys.
Yeah.
And Dressed to Kill is honestly one of the funniest stand-up specials I've ever seen. And everything he does is really, he's a little bit like Robin Williams, where it's all kind of off the top of his head.
Yep.
But I've never seen a comedian think that quickly on his feet and just roll with
it. He's brilliant.
Plus, you get the term executive transvestite.
Yeah. He's brilliant. Next on this list here, coming at 47, Elaine Boozler, legend. Legend. She was big in the 80s. She also had really big hair, Elaine Boozler. 46, Reggie Watts.
Yeah. Have you ever seen his stand-up?
No.
Oh, my God. It's great.
I mean, I'm not surprised because I think he's great. Have you ever listened to Mock Tube?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mock Tube.
Oh.
And
they do a killer cover of No Quarter.
They do. I remember once he was at the AV Club offices here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he did a cover of Panama by Van Halen, but he didn't sing the lyrics at all. He just sang about the country of Panama. He's like, lots of resources, shipping canals. It was so weird.
It's just disappointing to me that he's on Corden's show because he's so cool.
Well, and he used to be on Comedy Bang Bang.
Right. He did Comedy Bang Bang. He was the DJ on Comedy Bang Bang. Yeah. He was hilarious. I think he's great.
Well, he's got all the money in the world now to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a net win.
Yeah. I mean, the only time I ever watch Corden is if he's got a guest on that I really, really love. Otherwise, and when I watch it, I go right through the monologue. I fast forward right through the monologue, whatever bit they're doing, just so I can see whoever the actor or actress is that I like or guest that I like. But I love Reggie Watts. And I think the bass player behind Reggie Watts is adorable. You know the bass player in the Late Late Show band?
Yeah, I know of her. I don't know who it is, but
I think I have a crush on her. I can't remember what her name is either, but I think she's just she's awesome. So, hey, we're talking stand-up comedians. It's Nick DiGilio here on the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush producing. We're here till 4. We want to hear from you. Talk or text 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming in next is Freddie Prinze. He started off really young. He committed suicide when he was 22. He was only 22 when he killed himself. But he just, I mean, his career took off like a rocket. I mean, you want to talk about like a booming overnight sensation. That's Freddie Prinze. Russell Peters is in here at 44. 43 is Amy Schumer. There's another one that I don't get.
I thought the one thing that she did that I thought was really, really funny was when she did a parody of 12 Angry Men on her show, and what they were trying to decide, what the jury was trying to decide, was whether or not she was hot. And it was just kind of like, I thought it was really clever and really funny. Like, Paul Giamatti's in that bit. It was like a star-studded cast.
Well, she did get a lot of cameos from stars and stuff like that, and everybody really loves the show. I just don't get her.
Yeah.
I just don't, I mean, I don't think she's funny. Yeah. And I think it's really weird that she and Jennifer Lawrence are like best friends. Like best friends.
There's a lot of friendships in Hollywood that I think are strange as hell. Yeah.
42, Phyllis Diller, she was a genius. She was a genius, and she broke a lot of barriers too. Her and Joan Rivers from that era. You know, Joan Rivers especially. Joan Rivers was great. So, but Phyllis Diller coming in number 42. We got more stand-up comedians to talk about. We want to hear from you. Phone lines, text lines open, 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we continue. Yeah, Nick DiGilio show here. We continue through the morning until 4 o'clock. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features will begin at 3 o'clock with you, Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context. Nick D Show Spies and Fly Jams Friday. And I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Phone and text lines are open, 312-981-7200. We've been talking about stand-up comedians and stand-up comedy in general and ripping through some of the best stand-up comedians of all time in honor of this ABC special that aired last night about Richard Pryor. And so, you know, who do you think is funny? We want to hear from you. What makes you laugh? Who do you think are some of the best stand-ups? Text or call us at 312-981-7200. Coming up next, 41, is Bernie Mac. Bernie Mac was great. He was great. His sitcom was great. He was so politically incorrect, and he didn't care. It didn't matter. Have you seen, Tom, the Spike Lee movie, The Original Kings of Comedy?
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious. And I have to say, you know, Steve Harvey is the host. It was Steve Harvey, Cedric the Entertainer, Bernie Mac, and D.L. Hughley. And Steve Harvey was he hosted and introduced all the comedians, but he did stuff and he did material himself. Steve Harvey does this bit in The Original Kings of Comedy about old school soul music as opposed to rap. And he starts playing some classic, you know, fly jams. I mean, and it is one of my favorite bits I've ever seen. It's hilarious. And he goes off on rap. It's so funny. Coming in at number 40 is Gary Shandling. Yeah, he was a great stand-up, but I think, you know, his stand-up was great. And obviously that's how he got started. He was discovered, you know, on The Tonight Show, and then he became like kind of the permanent host. Mm-hmm. When Johnny would go away, Shandling would come in. But I think Gary Shandling, besides the stand-up, is best remembered for being so innovative on television.
The Larry Sanders Show.
Larry Sanders Show, it's Gary Shandling Show. Yeah. was groundbreaking. But the Larry Sanders Show is just, I mean, that's the best.
When Rip Torn passed away, and we revisited, go ahead, have yourself a salty dog. I could not stop laughing. That bit from that show, the salty dog. That's what I say to my friends now when they're acting crazy. I'd be like, hold on there. Why don't you just have a salty dog?
Rip Torn was a genius on that show. That's one of the best shows ever. And and Shandling was brilliant on it. So funny. The David Duchovny stuff. Oh, my God. 39, Moms Mabley. Do you know who Moms Mabley is?
I don't.
She is a groundbreaking African-American comedian.
Oh.
Who was one of the first African-American women to do stand-up at a time when it was, And she wore, like, a crazy floppy hat, and she had, like, a... She wore moo-moos and a floppy hat.
She's... You know who plays her on The Marvelous Miss Maisel?
No.
Wanda Sykes.
Wanda Sykes plays her?
Yeah. I think they're in their, third season? This is the third season that just came out?
I haven't been watching.
Oh, I love that show
so
much. But, she opened... Maisel, I think, at one point, opens up at the Apollo for Moms, and she's portrayed by Wanda Sykes.
That's pretty cool.
And Wanda Sykes is incredible.
Yeah,
on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as Moms. It's
But that's great casting.
It's incredible casting.
That's great casting.
And what an honor too to get to play that role.
Play a hero.
Yeah,
you know. 38, Roseanne Barr, another one I don't get.
I like Roseanne. I think Roseanne's pretty funny.
I like the show. I'm not crazy about her stand-up, but I thought the show was cool until they won the lottery.
Well, that was... Roseanne wanted to do
it. It was ridiculous. But what that show... Because it really was a very realistic look at middle-class people, working-class people, which wasn't really represented a lot on TV, especially from that point of view.
Yeah. And that'll be her legacy, I think, will be the TV... I think her stand-up is pretty funny.
Yeah, but it's
the
TV show.
The TV show is really where she made her mark.
And I love John Goodman.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love John Goodman in everything. I mean, I think John Goodman is incapable of not being good. 37, Sam Kinison. That's pretty low.
Oh, that is fairly low for Sam Kinison.
By the way, it's Nick DiGilio. We're on the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is producing, and the phone lines and text lines are open for your thoughts on stand-up comedy and who you think is funny. 312-981-7200. I remember seeing Sam Kinison the first time I saw Sam Kinison. He was on the Dangerfield special. He was one of the comedians on the Rodney Dangerfield special in the early 80s because Rodney saw him, put him on the show. And that made his career. And I'd never seen anything like him, like Sam Kinison. I saw him live. My friend Joe, hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? My late friend Joe and I went at the Park West at sort of the height of his popularity. Like when the video for Wild Thing had come out with Jessica Hahn. So I saw him and... about halfway through the set, Joe leans over to me and goes, this guy's not going to make it to 40. And the odd thing was that it wasn't the substance abuse because he went through, he was a massive drinker and he took a lot of drugs. Everybody knows the story. He would do horrible things. And like at one point, he was in Jessica Hahn's hotel room or something. And he was completely loaded and he dropped trow and crapped on the floor. And this was the kind of stuff that Sam Kinison did. And so everybody was like, this guy's got to slow down. He's taking too many drugs. He's drinking too much booze. I mean, this is just insane. And he did tons of cocaine. And so everybody thought he was going to die because of a drug overdose or some horrible thing that has to do with substance abuse. He died in a car accident and he was sober, which is the weird thing. That's how Sam Kinison died. So what about, Daniel Kitson? I don't know who that is. Do you know who Daniel Kitson is? Comes in at number 36, came in above Sam Kinison. Fusing stand-up and theater into carefully constructed solar venture. This is a British comedian. He scrutinizes bits of his biography with contemplating bigger issues of the nature of time, memory, and individual perception. He's got an incredible command of language and craft, whether it's mulling over the death of an aunt or a scathing review of his act. Don't know who he is. British guy, though. Tig Notaro, I love her. I love her. I think she's insanely brave. For those people who don't know, she had a double mastectomy because she had breast cancer. And so she takes off her shirt and, you know, and does, you know, part of the set with no shirt on to show her, you know. And the stuff that she talks about, I love her delivery. I also love, have you ever seen the videos of, because she knows nothing about pop culture at all. Like, she doesn't know movies. She doesn't know anything. She doesn't know TV shows. And so there are these videos that are on YouTube of people trying, you know, testing her, to asking her questions about pop culture and her just not knowing anything. Like, I mean, in big stuff too. Like bands, like huge bands and huge TV shows. That's no idea. It's hilarious with them trying to like, people are trying to tell her who, I mean, I'm talking major pop culture stuff, stuff that everybody knows, stuff that people don't even watch TV know. And there's a series of videos. I think she's got a TV show. It might be on YouTube or it might be on a cable network somewhere. But one of the bits they do is someone tries to describe a landmark thing in pop culture, whether it be a TV show or a movie or a song, and try to describe it to her, and she doesn't get it. That's one of the things about Tig Notaro that's really funny. Greg H. in Buffalo Grove says, hey, guys, I'm going to stir up controversy here. These are my picks. Number one, Joan Rivers. Number two, Bill Cosby. Number three, Joe Coy. And number four, Jeff Dunham. It's a shame that Bill Cosby turned out to be such a scumbag. Because I gotta say, I grew up listening to his records. I mean, I don't listen to him anymore, and I wouldn't watch the Cosby Show if you say to save my life now after what he did. But those albums growing up, they were seminal for me. I listened to them all the time. I grew up listening to those records all the time. And I think that there was a time period where Bill Cosby was unbelievably brilliant and one of the best storytellers and one of the funniest guys on the planet. You can't not talk about comedy and not at least mention him. It's horrible what he did, and I will not listen to anything that the guy's done before. But there was a time growing up that's all I listened to. Did you ever have comedy albums in your house?
Comedy albums, yeah.
Yeah?
We had, do you consider the Jerky Boys comedy albums?
That's a comedy album, yeah. I'm talking stand-up, though.
No, stand-up, big one in our house was Billy Connolly.
Oh, sure.
Bless him. The Big Yin.
I love Billy Connolly.
If you are Scottish, you are required to love Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
A lot of his stuff. Patton Oswalt. My dad was a big Patton Oswalt fan. He thought he was really, really, really funny.
By the way, he's number 34, which is way too low for Patton Oswalt.
Mm-hmm.
Way too low. I think he's brilliant. I think Patton Oswalt is absolutely brilliant and also a good actor. I mean, if you go back and look at Big Fan, and especially Young Adult, he did with Charlize Theron,
mm-hmm.
He's so good in that movie. Mm-hmm. And he's hilarious.
He really likes Chicago, too.
He does. He
comes here a lot.
Yeah. He taped his last special, the one that was done after his wife died,
mm-hmm.
Which is brilliant, was taped at the Athenaeum. And well, he loves Chicago. He's also in Magnolia.
He is.
Yeah. he's the blackjack dealer in Magnolia. I'm glad you like my work. During the big beginning of Magnolia. So it's Nick DiGilio, everybody. It's Friday morning, and after 3 o'clock, we are going to jump into the regular Friday features. Before that, we're talking some more stand-up comedy, and we're getting a bunch of texts in, and if you want to call up, we'd love to hear from you. What makes you laugh? Who's funny? Best stand-ups of all time? Talk or text at 312-981-7200. We continue. I love that song so much. Oh. Nick DiGilio, as we continue, how are you? We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We're in the Skyline studio. I'm Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer. Vic Vaughn does the news. And we're with you till 4. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And coming up at 4, you've got our friends over at Bradley Place, the WGN-TV Morning News from 4 to 5, and then Bob Surratt at 5 o'clock has your morning drive on this Friday. Fly Jams Friday, straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up after 3. But right now we're still talking about some stand-up comedy. Who do you think is funny? What makes you laugh? Who are some of the best stand-up comedians of all time? 773 says Hannibal Buress. Very funny guy. Very, very funny, and a really funny dude who also appears on one of the weirdest shows ever, which I love, is the Eric Andre Show. 847 says the late great John Panette. I will never forget that guy. Yeah, he was a funny dude. But yeah, Hannibal Buress, I think he's brilliant, and I love him on Eric Andre's Show.
Oh my God!
I love the Eric Andre Show. I love it.
It's like criminal what that show is.
It's just so insane and
basically a fake talk show,
right?
Where Eric Andre takes every opportunity possible to torture his own guests,
right? And they have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The one with Maria Menounos is probably one of the funniest ones ever, where they bring three people out. They bring three people out in there, and Maria Menounos has no idea what's going on. Like, I mean, nobody does, because it's just it's the craziest, most surreal, insane thing that you'll ever see. I mean, it's not for everybody's taste.
No. My girlfriend hates the Andre Show.
Oh, I know a lot of people who hate it. I think it's great.
It blinds me with laughter.
Yeah. And it's only 15 minutes long, too. So, you know what I mean? It never outstays its welcome. It's just like it's the right 15 minutes, and they all end very abruptly. But he destroys the set every time he comes out. Like, that's the opening. He throws himself all over the place and destroys the set. But when Maria Menounos was on, she had no idea what was happening. So they bring three people out. And he says to Maria Menounos, he says, pick one person. And she's like, what? He's like, just pick one person. So she picks the guy in the middle. Eric Andre pulls out a gun and shoots him. He's got like a blood packet in.
Yeah.
You know, and Maria Menounos is like, what is it's hilarious. But Hannibal Buress is great on it, too. He's a funny guy. Hannibal Buress, by the way, is the one who broke all the Bill Crosby stuff.
He did.
He's responsible for that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. He got booed off, or not booed off stage. He got his mic cut at Loyola.
Yeah.
That was a big story because they told him, you know, it's a Catholic school, it's a Catholic university. They're like, you can't tell priest jokes. And
of course he did.
Immediately went out, and he actually had his tech team put the letter that they wrote to him saying that he can't tell priest jokes, and he read it verbatim.
That's hilarious.
And was like openly mocking it, and they pulled his mic.
That's hilarious. 33, Janine Garofalo. Not a big Janine Garofalo fan.
So they didn't have Diet Pepsi, but they had silverware?
Yeah. No. They didn't have silverware, but they didn't have Diet Coke.
Yeah, yeah. That's well, it.
Just give me a break, man. I got a lot of tables. Cable Guy. That's from Cable Guy, by the way, for people who don't know. 32 is Patrice O'Neill. Very funny guy. 31, Sarah Silverman. Sarah Silverman I think Sarah Silverman is pretty funny. I like her. I like her more in movies than her stand up. 30, Woody Allen. Woody Allen, his comedy albums are hilarious. You know, before he started making movies, he did stand-up. I know a lot of people might not know that, but Woody Allen did stand-up for years, and he worked on the Borscht Belt. He was in Greenwich Village. He worked a lot of different scenes, and his material is really funny. Those early Woody Allen comedy albums are great. Have you heard those? Have you heard his stand-up?
Yeah.
It's great.
I used to be a big fan of Woody Allen, actually, when I was a kid, because he made the movie Ants. And I loved Ants.
You loved Ants. I remember that came out the same time as A Bug's Life.
Well, yeah, it was one of those situations where two movies that were almost exactly the same.
Yeah. I like Bug's Life more.
In the long run, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Bug's Life is just, it's a children's remake of The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. I love that movie. That's one of my favorite Pixar movies. But, A Bug's Life.
Yeah, but Ants is weird. It's crazy. Weird. And they do like a whole Starship Troopers style battle, and it's just nuts.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's got what, Stallone has a voice in it, too?
Yeah, Stallone's in it.
Yeah. Ants. But I like A Bug's Life is actually one of my favorite Pixar movies. I love it. Here's Jeffrey on WGNI. Jeffrey.
Yes, I wanted to mention, I don't know if you remember, or I'm sure you do, Marty Feldman.
Marty Feldman?
Yeah,
yeah, the actor.
Funny Eyes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I wanted to mention it because he had a television series in the very early 70s, and it's now on Mandatorium. You can't get it. But he was the funniest, one of the funniest human beings I've ever seen. And his television show, I laughed so hard my insides were killing me. I was like being stabbed by daggers.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to mention that. I just wish one could get his TV show.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of. I wasn't even aware that Marty Feldman had a TV show. Wasn't even aware. I mean, obviously we know him all from Young Frankenstein and, you know, other movies. Especially Young Frankenstein. He's hilarious in Young Frankenstein. Abby Normal. Thanks, Jeffrey, for the call. 312-981-7200. 29, Dick Gregory. Legendary comedian. 28, Robert Klein. Robert Klein is, well, first of all, he's the first guy that ever had an HBO special. He was the first one, and it was in 1975. That was the very first stand-up concert that they aired on HBO. This guy's a legend. Robert Klein is a legend. He's another one that is loved and respected by everybody in the comedy community, and everybody acknowledges what an influential stand-up comedian he is, and still doing it too, and I mean ridiculously funny, and just the guy's a comedy legend. Robert Klein is a comedy legend, and you know, kind of put out the blueprint for what stand-up should be. And influenced countless other people. 27, Red Fox. You used to listen to the Red Fox. They used to have the party albums. The party albums that you would listen to at parties, and you'd turn out all the lights, and you'd put on a Red Fox album, and it was dirty, and you couldn't listen to it. It was adults only. So you had to, and they used to call them party albums. You'd have to sneak them out. I used to listen to all those albums when I was a kid. All the Richard Pryor records that were completely inappropriate for a kid of like 9 or 10. I listened to all of them. But yeah, Red Fox, he did the Chitlin Circuit, and his party albums were just massive. And then, of course, he got Sanford and Son. So, let's see. We got some people on the line. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
Jim Conway or Jerry Van Dyke?
Okay.
Both of them are, I mean, other people, yeah, Robin Williams is great, and Richard Pryor, all of them, yeah. But Jim Conway, when he was on Carol Burnett, they said, just go for it, and they couldn't finish their sketch because he was so good.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things that everybody watches the Carol Burnett show for is to watch Harvey Korman break. Because they would do this, they would do a scene together, and Harvey Korman could not keep it together. Because Tim Conway would just do all these bits that weren't supposed to happen. We played the bit with the Mama's Family bit with Dick Van Dyke when he talked about the elephants that had their trunks connected.
Yeah,
Does the mama? He improvised that whole thing. And then Vicki Lawrence's comment at the end, of course, is the best. But they you know, there's that dent. One of the classic ones is the dentist sketch with Harvey Korman as a patient and Tim Conway as a dentist. And it involved, you know, like him shooting himself up by mistake with Novocaine. And it's unbelievably funny. And Harvey Korman just can't keep it together. But that was one of the things that you, one of the reasons I loved watching Carol Burnett was to watch Tim Conway break up Harvey Korman. Yeah. John, thanks for the call. Here's Dominic on WGN. Hi, Dominic.
Hi there, Nick.
Hi.
I want to mention these four comedians. They're famous in the 50s, the 60s, maybe the 70s too. Jackie Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Maury Amsterdam.
Yep.
Jack Tyler. And Henny Youngman.
Yeah, Henny Youngman is, an absolute legend. Like one-liners after one-liners after one-liners, and he's got that violin. he was funny. He was funny, man. Yeah. I remember, Dominic. I remember when I was living with my friend Scott Oaken, and we were living at the Honeybee Complex. Came home from the North Woods as we're wont to do after a few cocktails, and which is not good when you see like an infomercial in the middle of the night. If you're drunk, you have a tendency to maybe I need that, and then you order it. I ordered the best of Henny Youngman.
Oh my God!
I ordered the best of it. It was great. It was a double VHS tape, the best of Henny Youngman.
Did it come with some Henny Youngman juice?
No, but Oaken and I watched it all the time. We watched it all the time.
The best of Henny Youngman.
The best of Henny Youngman. Seemed like a good idea when I had like 10 beers in me.
Everything seems like a good
idea. Well, you know what I did? You know what I did like an idiot? I got loaded one night and I was watching TV and an infomercial for the cleaning product Quick and Bright came on. And I was drunk and I was like, I need Quick and Bright. And then two giant buckets of Quick and Bright show up, you know, like a couple of weeks later, and they just sat underneath my sink in the kitchen for like years. Quick and Bright. I got seduced by the Quick and Bright infomercial. Henny Youngman comes in at number 20, or not Henny Youngman, Rodney Dangerfield comes in at number 26. Is that insane? That's way too low.
That's probably, he should be at least in the top 20.
No,
at the very least.
I would say top 10. So, okay. We're going to wrap this conversation up, and hang on, everybody, if you're on the line. If you got a text coming in, we want to hear from you. Who's funny? Who's the funniest stand-up comedian? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. People try to put us to death. Talking about my generation. Just because we get around. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on a Friday morning. After the 3 o'clock news, the Friday regular features will begin. Straight out of context, Nick D Show spies, you big dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. Right now, we're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is my my producer, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with Vic Vaughn. We are talking about some of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time. There was a two-hour documentary last night on ABC about Richard Pryor, who I maintain is the funniest man that ever lived. So we're going through and talking about some of the greatest stand-up comedians of all time. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Pat on WGN. Go ahead, Pat.
Morning. How are you doing today?
All right. What's up?
My favorite stand-up would be Bob Newhart.
Yeah. He was great. Great stand-up comedian.
He did a skit as he was a driving instructor. So you put yourself in his position and just person's running over cones and getting and hitting this person, that person. You just say, oh, you got too close. You know, that deadpan face and stand-up that he does is just hysterical.
It is great. And all the stuff that he did, like, the phone call stuff, the bits that he did where he's, like, making phone calls, absolutely hilarious. He was funny. And his show was great. The Bob Newhart show was great.
Yeah.
So
okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Pat. I love the Bob Newhart show. I love both of the Newhart shows. I like the Newhart show where they ran the inn with Larry. I'm Larry, and this is my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. You ever watch the Newhart show?
Yeah. Well, he's special at Loyola because we've got a theater named. I'm pretty sure he's a Loyola alum.
I think so, yeah.
And we have a theater that's named after him. Yeah, he donated it to the school. So he came and he was really, really nice to everybody. He was so nice.
He's so funny. And he's in Horrible Bosses. So that's one of those movies I can watch any time. The second one sucked. But you like Horrible Bosses, right? The original?
Well, yeah. The only bad experience I had with it was I went to go see it in the theater with my mom.
Oh, man.
And there are some, especially the bits with Jennifer Aniston,
yeah.
That I was just like, I really wish that someone would just set me on fire and just end it.
I understand. Look, I saw Midsummer with my parents. Last half hour of that movie, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. It doesn't matter how old you get. So
no, it's absolutely right. Okay, so Rodney comes in at 26, 25, Eddie Murphy. 24, Eddie Izzard.
There you go.
23, Don Rickles. That's too low.
Mr. Warmth.
Rickles was a genius. And he could get, I mean, you know, how he got away with some of the stuff that he said. I mean, I know it was a different time, but he got away with insulting every ethnicity that you can possibly imagine. People loved it.
Yeah.
22, Jonathan Winters, a true genius and a nut. Like, he was crazy.
One of my favorite moments from Johnny Carson, him and Robin Williams, Winters shows up in the full, like, Union Army gear.
Yeah. And that was his hero. Robin Williams was his hero.
I know.
And, 21, Bob Newhart, who was mentioned. 20, Mitch Hedberg.
I used to do drugs. I still do drugs, but I used to do them too.
Right. 19, Albert Brooks. His stand-up is brilliant. I mean, everything he does is brilliant. I think, you know, I mean, everybody knows my love for Albert Brooks. I think he's made 4 comic masterpiece movies, like masterpiece, including one of the funniest movies ever made. And the funniest movie of the 80s, which is Lost in America. But his stand-up is brilliant. He does a bit with a speak and spell where he's supposed to be a ventriloquist, and it's a speak and spell where he glued eyes and a nose and stuff on it. He did that on the Carson show. Killed. We've played that before.
We have definitely played that before. See.
So funny. 18, Kevin Hart again. I don't get it. 17, Bill Burr. Here you go. 16, Billy Connolly.
Absolutely. I don't know if you've ever listened to it. And some of it is very, like, specifically Scottish humor.
Oh, no. I love Billy Connolly.
Yeah, he's great. And some people don't like him because it's very, very, like, regionally Scottish humor. But he is incredibly funny.
He is great. What was the name of the movie where he played the zombie?
Oh, God. I don't remember.
I can't remember, but he played a zombie. And it was a comedy. I can't remember it. So we can look it up.
Fido.
Fido, that's it. Yeah. 15, Stephen Wright. Again, I don't get it. 14, Andy Kaufman. I don't know if I would call what he did stand-up. You know what I mean? It's like performance art more than anything else.
It was more making you think you were insane.
Yeah. 13, Bill Hicks. 12, Robin Williams. 11, Steve Martin.
He didn't like stand-up either.
No, I mean,
But he did it.
He was unbelievably successful.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw him at the amphitheater. He filled up the amphitheater. He was unbelievably popular in the 70s. 10, Mort Saul, legend. 9, Dave Chappelle. 8, Bill Cosby. I mean, you have to acknowledge. 7, Jerry Seinfeld. A comedian's comedian again. Takes it very, very seriously. This guy doesn't need to go out on the road and do stand-up, but he does it. He's got millions and millions of dollars from that TV show, and yet he still goes out. You ever see the movie Comedian?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
6, Joan Rivers.
Oh, God.
I loved her. Mm-hmm. I love Joan Rivers. She's so funny. 5, Chris Rock.
Mm.
Another one that's tainted. 4, Louis C.K.
Yeah, but some of those bits that he did, I don't think I've ever laughed harder at a comedian.
Listen, I realize the guy is, you know, is a sexual, like, deviant and did some stupid stuff. He's brilliantly funny. His stand-up is great. His TV show was great, Louis.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate. His personal life is so, he's such a, like a weirdo. What he did to women. But he, I was a massive fan of Louis C.K. Like a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
And when Louis was on FX, I just worshiped that show. He's also responsible for Pamela Adlon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he brought her to the forefront. The better things wouldn't exist if he didn't put his name on it.
All right.
Number three, Lenny Bruce.
Hey, man.
Historically, yeah. You can't argue with that.
And his bits are really funny.
Yeah. Did you see the movie Lenny with Dustin Hoffman?
Yep.
Bob Fosse.
Mm-hmm.
To George Carlin. You know, what can you say about George Carlin?
Seven words you can't say on television.
He was insightful. He was brilliant. You know, he cared a lot about people and about the world. And his observations were fantastic. And he was also really brilliantly funny. But he never shied away from being controversial. He never shied away from being political, saying what he felt, you know, and doing it in a manner in which was just brilliantly funny. One of the greatest. One of the greatest ever. And then number one, according to Rolling Stone, is Richard Pryor, which brings us full circle. I used to listen to the Richard Pryor comedy albums when I was a little kid, which was completely completely inappropriate. And when he taught in Live on the Sunset Strip, when he talks about his trip to Africa and how life-changing it was, and the decision that he would never, ever say the N-word again is beautiful. And he never did. He never said it again. And he said it a lot on his albums and, you know.
I mean, the first album he put out.
Well, I mean, the N-word was included in the title of three of his albums.
Yeah.
That N-word is crazy was a huge one. But that it was life-changing when he went. It's really beautiful to listen to him talk about how this trip to Africa, to the motherland, absolutely changed him. And that's just in addition to all the other personal stuff that he would do on stage that were brilliant. Yeah, I mean, and you learn so much about him himself from, you know, these stand-up specials and from these movies. But yeah, and again, everybody has their own taste of what they think is funny. Some people might not, you know, like Richard Pryor, and I can understand that. No one laughs at the same things, but I really think that he is absolutely the funniest man that ever lived. So that was fun talking about stand-up.
Yeah, it's always a good time.
Yeah.
Everybody so, participating, too.
Coming up, yeah, I want to thank everybody for calling in and texting. You stick around, and we're going to be doing the Straight Out of Context Nick D Show Spies, and we'll start with you, Big Dummy. After the news.
Here's dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did? Oh, no, you big dummy. You dummy.
The Nick DiGilio Show continues live in the Skyline Studio here. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is here as my producer. And it's time for the regular Friday features that we always have for you on Friday morning. And we start with you, big dummy. This is when I read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy of the week. Tom votes, I vote, and then you vote. 312-981-7200. Dummy number one. Dummy number one. Dummy number one. A little more than a week ago, a Yellowstone National Park search and rescue team pulled a man to safety from nearly 900 feet down in the Grand Canyon at the Yellowstone. David Christensen, 55, of Winnemac, Indiana, was there illegally. Yellowstone National Park officials said the rescue of Christensen was difficult and dangerous. It took four 600-foot ropes, said Canyon District Ranger Clint Powell. who served as the incident commander for the rescue. Powell used a unique method to get access to the canyon, which is closed to normal vehicles in the winter months. Most people can only access interior parts of the park on a guided snowmobile or a slow coach tour. But some are allowed to get permits for unguided trips in the park as so long as they know the follow park rules. Christian obtained one of those permits. He and a friend snowmobiled to Lookout Point, where Christensen tried to rappel to the bottom while his friend waited above on a two-way radio. But Christensen made a big mistake in planning his adventure. I was 850 feet down to the river, and I think his rope was only 360 feet. So Christensen jumped off his rope and scrambled to the river, but he couldn't make it back to the rope. It took 6 hours to complete the rescue.
Dummy. La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. Just Donna and me. And the dummy makes three.
Dummy number two, dummy number two, dummy two. A British man was sentenced to indefinite detention, according to the BBC, after having been caught on camera attempting to burn down a synagogue instead burning down himself. When police arrested him at his Alexander Terrence home, he had burns on his hand, his forehead, his hair. He was carrying two lock knives and two lighters. As he was put in the police van, Morgan said, "Please tell me that the synagogue is burning to the ground. If not, it's poor preparation," he said. The court heard the attack on the building coincided with a Jewish feast day commemorating disasters, including the Holocaust. The repairs totaled more than £23,000. Judge Anthony Leonard handed Morgan a hospital order without limit of time, but said that he would feel anger and revulsion for what he did. President of the synagogue, Mr. Richard Halsey, thanked the police for their brilliant response and support.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy. I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
Dummy number three, dummy number three, dummy number three. Police say a pantsless intruder entered a Fairfield couple's backyard last Wednesday, tried to get inside the house through the doggy door. The Farrells have lived in the Sycamore Drive neighborhood for 20 years. They said they felt safe there until a prowler hopped their fence and into their backyard. The Farrell said that he was working in his garage when the intruder approached the house, where his caregiver and wife, who has chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, were both inside. He dropped his drawers and mooned her and was trying to get her inside, to get her outside. He said the man tried to force his way into their home through a sliding door, and then he tried the dog door. "I don't want him to do anything to my wife or my helper," he said. Farrell said his wife immediately called 911 and help quickly came. Police officers chased the suspect through the neighborhood. When they caught him, they discovered that he was a registered sex offender who had been wanted for violating his parole and had cut off his GPS ankle device.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. My only child is a dummy.
Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy number four. A robbery suspect was held to the ground after residents realized that the gun he threatened them with wasn't real. Residents of a home in the 100 block of Burr Oak Street heard a noise outside around 2:15 a.m. on Monday, January 13th. They opened the door and found the suspect pointing a gun at them. He demanded that they hand over their property. The suspect entered and began searching when the victims realized the gun was fake. They confronted the suspect, disarmed him, and held him to the ground until the Kalamazoo police arrived minutes later and arrested him. The suspect, an 18-year-old Kalamazoo resident, suffered minor injuries during the altercation. The victims were not hurt. Suspect is facing multiple felony charges.
Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke,
busted and
a dummy.
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. A Florida woman was arrested for threatening to rob a McDonald's because they didn't serve dipping sauce along with her food, a report said on Monday. McGuire McGree McLaughlin, 19, was denied the condiment at a McDonald's in Vero Beach, Florida last week and pledged to obtain the dipping sauce by, quote, whatever means necessary. According to a police report obtained by the Smoking Gun, a fracas allegedly took place at about 4 a.m. New Year's Day when police arrived to witness McLaughlin yelling profanities at the drive-thru because she claimed she didn't receive all of her food. The employee advised McLaughlin that dipping sauce costs 25 cents, read the report. McLaughlin further stated that she would be getting the sauce by whatever means necessary, however, could not specify what she meant by that. The McDonald's employees said that they did fear for their safety. McLaughlin was taken into custody for disorderly conduct. She needed to be placed into medical restraints by the arresting officers because she kept lopping her legs and refusing to walk forward.
And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
I'm not kidding you. You're a big dummy.
All right. All right. Why don't we continue and we'll vote. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'll give you a recap and you can be the first person to call in. If you are the first person to call in, you will vote with us. Tom will vote, I will vote, and you will vote on the biggest dummy. Who do you think the biggest dummy is? We'll do a recap coming up. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues. We're live in the Skyline Studio. My producer is Tom Hush. I'm Nick DiGiulio. And we are doing our regular Friday features, starting off with You Big Dummy. And this is when I read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. And that's what we're doing right now. So I'll give you a recap on our dummies of the week. We got the dummy who had to be rescued from the Grand Canyon. We got the dummy Nazi who set himself on fire. We got the pantsless dummy who tried to get into a house through a doggy door. We got the dummy home invader who had a fake gun. And the dummy woman who threatened McDonald's, threatened at a McDonald's because she didn't get her dipping sauce. Okay, Tom, where's your brain on this?
Well, I'll throw the runner-up to the Grand Canyon guy, because that's just the dumbest...
360-foot rope for a 900-foot drop.
Yeah. Someone did not pre-plan.
No.
Someone was not thinking straight.
No.
I'm going to say the lady who got lost in the sauce. She just needed that dipping sauce so bad, she threatened it by any means necessary.
Well, you don't want dry nuggets. okay, so you're going with the woman who threatened the McDonald's.
Yeah.
Okay. The like you said, the Grand Canyon guy is an idiot. I mean, he's just dumb.
Stupid.
Anytime there's someone pantsless, I have a tendency to enjoy that. I just love the fact that this guy busts into somebody's house and they beat the crap out of him. They said he was injured. He was injured in the altercation. He had a fake gun and the couple beat him up.
That's what I would do.
I love it.
I mean, I'm about to batter this guy.
Yeah. But I have to agree with you. I heard this story about her threatening that the McDonald's I heard it during the week about her. I wonder what kind of sauce it was. What kind of sauce did she want?
I'm guessing honey mustard.
Yeah, you got your honey mustard. You got your barbecue.
Ranch is just too easy to come by.
Ranch, you got sweet and sour, right? They still have sweet and sour.
They used to have Szechuan sauce.
That's right.
I doubt she was looking for that.
No. All right.
Well, I'm going to say honey mustard.
She wanted her dipping sauce, and she meant it. I love the fact that she had to be restrained.
Sometimes people are just, they're just animals,
they
man.
Want their sauce, man. She wants that sauce. Okay. We have a caller who is going to vote. Kathy.
Hi, how are you, Nick?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. Who do you think is the biggest dummy of the week?
The Lost in the Sauce lady, for sure.
It's unanimous, Kathy. The woman who threatened McDonald's because she didn't get her dipping sauce.
That's correct.
Okay, take care. All right, see you later. All right, there you go.
No dry nuggets.
You don't want dry nuggets. That's a terrible condition if you've got dry nuggets. All right. So that's your dummy of the week. We'll do it again next week. Read five dummy stories and vote on the dummy. And if you want to get through, it's 312-981-7200. Are we ready to go on?
Let's do this.
All right. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight. Out of context, context, context. Context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context. All right, the Friday regular features continue. This is Straight Out of Context. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, which you should anyway because it's the best. And whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play them back and laugh every Friday. All right, Tom, shall we begin?
Let's do this. All right. First one coming to us from Night Owl. Here is Rokan.
Yeah, this is sphincter tightening time.
What? What?
Sphincter tightening time.
What does that even mean? I mean, I know what it means.
Yeah, this is sphincter tightening time.
I don't understand.
He was talking to a doctor about flu season. And I still don't know how.
But what does that have to do with?
Okay. I don't know. I have no idea. Okay. That show is crazy.
Yep.
Those people are crazy.
Yep.
I love them.
Okay.
But speaking of crazy, Nick D.
Me?
Yeah. No. Already. This is coming to us from Carlton.
I was at her apartment and she took it out. You know, was I talking about the snake?
Yeah, you were talking about the snake.
Big giant snake?
Big old snake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those things are scary.
You said Carlton, what, from Fresh Prince?
I wish. That'd be amazing.
You know, he hosts a game show called Catch 21. He does.
All right. I mean,
Alfonso, what's his name? Alfonso Cuarón? I can't remember.
Alfonso, okay, hold on. This is just going to bother me.
Alfonso Carlton, whatever. Alfonso Rabinowitz? No, it's not Rabinowitz.
Ribeiro?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's Alfonso it. Ribeiro.
Right.
I like him.
Rabinowitz.
Yeah, he's a real Rabinowitz.
Yeah. All right, let's continue.
All right, a little celebrity one here. It's Dan Rowan from Channel 9.
Our good buddy.
Good buddy over there. Yeah. He's coming to us from Night Owl.
I'm on the red line tomorrow. Am I supposed to wear pants or not?
Well, that's the pant. When was that? Or was that this weekend?
It was this past weekend.
It was this past weekend.
Yeah.
It was ride the CTA pantsless.
Yeah. I remember because my mom texted me and she said, so help me God, if I see your drawers on the evening news, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah. okay. At least it wasn't that cold out.
No, it was a good weekend for
Yeah.
It.
Okay.
It was a good weekend.
What show was he on?
That was on, I want to say that was with Roe.
It was with Roe.
Okay. Yeah, he was filling, he was in there for Ben Bradley. Usually Ben Bradley does a little hit, but Dan Rowan stepped in.
All right.
Next, it's Matt Bubala.
Oh.
Weekend overnights. This is coming to us from Diane in Naperville.
They didn't put it all in.
Oh, God. Come on now.
Talking about a snowblower, putting oil in a snowblower.
Ah, okay.
Mark Carmen here up next, coming to us from Jim.
Getting longer and longer by the moment.
Oh, man. Talking about the odds of DePaul being a NCAA tournament team. They've had a bad streak here.
Yeah.
Bad streak.
That's your alma mater.
No.
Oh, you're Loyola.
Loyola.
That's right. Sorry.
How dare you?
Sorry.
Blue Demons. No.
I got them mixed up.
They're both Catholic universities.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next up, the lovely Amy Guth.
Oh, I love
her. One of my favorites. Yes. She was filling in recently. This one's also from Jim.
What are you working on ahead?
You worked with Amy, right?
Yeah, Saturday nights. She was the first show, regular show I worked on. Her and I. She's something else.
She used to follow my show when I was on Saturdays. And so I used to do crosstalk with her and get to see her every Saturday. And now I never see her.
I know. She's off just doing the goof thing.
Yeah.
She's always busy.
She's lovely.
Next up, I'm so glad he's got a good week this week. Bob Surratt. It's just so nice to have him here. This is coming to us from Brian.
Well, just don't leave the tea bag in there for a long period of time.
Talking about how tea is good for you.
Yeah.
Tea, it's helpful for you.
It is.
In these winter months.
It is. Tea is good. It's quite helpful.
Just don't tea bag for too long.
If you get a cold, helps you out.
Put the tea bag in there. Yeah.
Okay.
And then another one from Brian. It's Mary V.
That's good for your throat.
Okay. All right.
Also from the tea conversation.
Yeah, I got to be. By the way, it's Nick DiGilio here, and we are on 720 WGN. Tom Hush is producing. We're here till 4, and these are our regular features. We're doing Straight Out of Context. That's what's happening right now. Okay.
All right. Next up, Eric Childress.
Oh.
Childress. Pardon. That one's coming to us from Mark.
I didn't just, take all my number ones and number twos.
That's good.
That's a good one.
That's good. I like that one.
All right. Next up, another one from Bob Surratt. Like I said, he's having a good week this week. This one's coming to us from Scott in Carpentersville.
All right. You're seeing the guys go in and out, in and out.
Oh, man.
I think they were talking baseball. Or no, they might have been talking hockey there, talking about going in, getting the
changing lines.
Yeah, changing the line.
Okay.
All right. One more before we break here.
Yeah.
Let's get Mr. John Williams. This is always fun. This is coming to us from Scott as well.
I'm uncomfortable with my clothes off.
talking about massage parlors.
Oh, John Williams talking about massage parlors?
Yeah, he was talking about Massage Envy. It's a chain of massage parlors.
Okay.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
All right. I'm sorry. Every time I hear that, I think of the guy from Slapshot. Why don't you go to a massage parlor? Every time I hear that. Okay. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720. We will continue with Straight Out of Context, and the show continues right here on WGN. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb.
Context. What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
Nick DiGilio here. We continue on our Friday morning live in the Skyline studio. Tom Hush producing, and I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. And we're getting back to our regular Friday feature, Straight Out of Context. That's when you guys listen to the radio station 24/7 whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little bit dirty. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay, here we go. Let's continue with Straight Out of Context.
All right, next one coming to us from Dirty Dave. This was a guest on the Hannah DeVlante show.
It comes every day, so you gotta love it.
Okay. All right. What was she talking about?
She was talking about her newsletter.
Oh, okay.
I think she, I'm pretty sure she works for Politico.
Okay.
But next up, Nick D again. Oh, always man. Fun. This is actually a really good one. Coming to us from Fox Valley Mike.
Boom. Slap it right down. What was I talking about?
You're talking about that peanut butter jelly combo.
Oh, the goober.
Yeah.
Goober grape.
Can I...
All right.
Sorry. That was a great sound effect.
Well, thanks.
Well done.
I was hanging out with Michael Winslow.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Dean. Always good to have Dean on the show. This one's coming to us from Jesse.
I strap on the tool.
Oh, man.
Talking about... helping out Bob Surratt with fixing some tech, I think.
Oh.
Fixing something.
Okay.
Strap on the tool belt.
All right.
And then finally, Matt Bubala closing us out here. This one's coming to us from Steve and Roscoe.
And making it longer and longer and harder and harder.
Wow. Yeah, that's two of those that were similar.
Yeah.
Similar to that. What was he talking about?
He was talking about getting rid of interest on student loans.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, there's a good batch of Straight Out of Context. We'll do that again next week. And now we move on to our next regular feature.
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies.
Spies,
spies, spies.
Like us.
All right. Nick DiGilio here with Tom Hush as my producer, and we are doing our regular Friday features. That's what we're talking about. This is Nick D Show Spies. You participate in this. You listen to the station 24/7 whenever you hear anybody say me or talk about me. Jot down the day, the time, who said it. We want to know about it. You're a spy. And send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play them back every Friday. Okay.
All right. So this one's coming to us from the Justin Kaufman Show. I'm guessing you can guess who what we're talking about here. Actually, multiple people send this, but this one's from Carrie, who we'll give that credit to.
Ferris Bueller versus Risky Business. In for Ferris Bueller, Rachel Mason from Second City. She's one of the big wigs over at Second City. She'll take Ferris Bueller. And get this, you guys, from WGN Radio, Nick DiGilio is going to do Risky Business. So Nick said, I need to be in on Risky Business. It's his favorite film. And he also despises Ferris Bueller. So.
Oh, he sure does.
who was that who said it?
I don't know. I don't know. It was whoever was on that night.
I lost, by the way.
You did.
I did. The listeners enjoy Ferris Bueller more, so that means the listeners are wrong.
I demand a recount.
It's just absurd. But it was fun being on. It was fun being on Justin's show. I had a great time doing it. Anytime I can defend or talk about Risky Business, it makes me happy. Justin did say it was my favorite movie. It's my second favorite movie.
Get your facts straight, Justin.
Magnolia is my favorite movie. Now both of them star Tom Cruise, which I always find kind of strange. That my two favorite movies of all time both star Tom Cruise. But yeah, now Risky Business is it's a great movie, and it you know, meant a lot to me when I was 18, and still does. So, but that was fun. Thank you, Justin, for letting me in on the and he continues that battle.
Yeah, I think they're getting into the final four.
Get into it tonight. I think it's Adventures in Babysitting versus The Fugitive.
Well, I can tell you who wins that one.
Please,
come on.
By the way, Adventures in Babysitting was shot in Toronto. I just want to throw that. Just want to throw that out there.
No opinion one way or the other, but yeah. It was shot in Toronto.
It was shot in Toronto. And The Fugitive is much better. Okay. Is that it?
Yep.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And are we ready to get fly?
I think so.
Okay.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio. With my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Yeah, man. That's right. In case you're new to the Friday features, every Friday we like to get funky, and we take requests from you at 312-981-7200, and we have early requests as well, a bunch of them, and we play a bunch of fly jams. Those are R&B songs or R&B and some soul songs. Anything that's fly, that's funky, that's fresh. We like to kick off. We've been doing this for years and years now. We like to kick off your weekend and your Friday on a funky note, and we'll play your requests. It's DJ Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
That's right. Luscious Hushes has just arrived, and if you have a request for a fly jam, 312-981-7200. Now, you've got a bunch already.
Yeah, I've got a bunch already, so I'm going to try to get all of these in, okay?
Yeah, we got a little more time than we have in the past couple of weeks.
Exactly.
So we might be able to squeeze in as many as possible. So 312-981-7200, Fly Jams Friday begins, as it does every Friday. Okay.
All right, first up from Mark and Aurora, it's The Temptations, Superstar. We'll be right back.
You got to love the Temptations.
One of the flyest.
Yeah. You got to love them. You know, anything that's Motown related fits into the this segment. I like deep voiced guy on the Temptations. I love when deep voiced guy comes in. Yeah.
You got to have that bass.
A lot of those, yeah, those guy groups, the soul groups like the OJs and all these other guys, they always have the low voiced guy. There's always the deep voice guy. Johnny Deep Voice.
It's the same guy, dude. It's the same guy. Deep
Voice. It's Johnny Deep Voice. He runs from studio recording to studio recording. Which reminds me, do you ever see the SETV where Rick Moranis is playing Michael McDonald?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, my God. You have to see it. And it's just him because, you know, Michael McDonald appears on a lot of records in the background. You know, he does like, yeah. And so it's just, the bit is Rick Moranis is Michael McDonald driving from different studios to different studios, just jumping in while they're recording a song and going, yeah, and then leaving. And jumping in the car and going back to another studio. Yeah. And then at the end of it, he's at the final studio. And he's like, thank you, Mr. McDonald. He goes, yeah, thank you. And that's not how, obviously, how Michael McDonald talks. But yeah, the whole, yeah. He's got the beard and everything. He's driving around town.
What a fool believes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good old Michael McDonald. Shine, sweet freedom. Shine your light on me.
All right.
Yeah. Taking it to the street. All right.
And the next one's going to us from David Monroe. It's old Curtis Mayfield. Oh, it is Superfly.
Please.
Darkest of night with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong. A lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh, Superfly. You're gonna make your fortune by and by. But if you lose, don't ask no questions why. The only game you know is do or die.
Yeah. Oh, Curtis Mayfield.
Famously did not like the movie Superfly.
Did not. Did not like it. It's not a very good movie. The soundtrack's fantastic.
Yeah.
Movie's not that great. And I love all the blaxploitation movies. And I like watching Superfly. It's fun because it's, you know, it's 70s blaxploitation at its best. And I love those movies. So, but yeah, Curtis Mayfield taken from us again too soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Local genius right there.
Absolutely. One of Chicago's very own.
No question.
Local son.
No question. All right.
All right. Next up, coming to us from the 773, it's Before I Let Go by Maze.
This you can get. You strip right beside me. Yeah. And I won't forget.
I always forget about this band. They were Fly.
Texter claims that this might be the first time that Maze has ever been played on Fly Jams.
I'm not sure about that. I think they have been. I think they've been played. Maybe not that song. That might be the first time that song has been played.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah. But I remember that band. I actually forgot about them. If they were featured on Fly Jams Friday, it was probably a very long time ago. So, one more before we break.
Yeah, let's do one more. All right. More before we break. Coming to us from our friend Dino, it's Midnight Star with Headlines.
Headlines.
Now, that's definitely the first time that song has been played on Fly Jams Friday. That's a new one.
A Fly Jams first.
Fly Jams first, right there. Who is that again?
That's Midnight Star with the song Headlines.
Okay, Midnight Star. All right. I know that. I know the name. I know the band. I just don't. And I know that that song has never been played on Fly Jams Friday. Okay, it's Nick DiGilio here, and we're live in the Skyline Studio on WGN. Tom Hush is here as Luscious Hushes. And we're spinning some Fly Jams as we do every Friday, where we take requests and play some funky music to kick off your weekend. And we'll get back to it. Favorite disco song of all time. Yeah, I love that song so much. And of course, it's the beginning of Boogie Nights.
True that.
Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline Studio. Tom Hush is the producer, and we are doing Fly Jams Friday. This is when Luscious Hushes, our DJ, comes in, and we get all funky, and we like to start off your Friday with some funky music, and we've been doing this for years, and it's 312-981-7200. We take your requests, and we play some really funky music. Did somebody request Best of My Love?
Yep, that's coming to us from Mike in Louisville.
Good choice.
Very good choice.
Good choice. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite disco song of all time. I love that song. It's so good. All right, DJ Luscious Hushes.
Next up, we're going to a little Reverend Al Green.
Oh, well, please.
We gotta stay together. That's coming to us from Margaret in Bridgeport. Let's stay together, everyone.
Featured in Pulp Fiction. It's still one of my major regrets is that on my first honeymoon, we went to Memphis, and Al Green's got a church outside of Memphis where he preaches. And we were going to go, but we were too hungover on the Sunday morning to go. So we did not see. We could have seen Al Green preaching, which would have been
a life-changing
like
experience.
In his church. So I love Al Green.
I know. One of the best.
Yeah.
One of the best of all time.
Absolutely. It's Fly Jammed. We've heard Al Green many, many times over the years on Fly Jams Friday, and it's always a treat. Mm-hmm. Always. All right, do we have another one?
Yep, another one coming up here from Realm Rose is her name. Disco Juice.
Disco Juice.
Disco Juice by Cloud One. Let's take a listen.
Another Fly Jam first. So that's an instrumental.
Yeah.
Disco Juice.
Love it.
What does that mean?
If you have to ask, then you don't. You'll never know.
I'll never be drinking. I never will drink Disco Juice. I've never. That's a great name. I've never. I don't think I've ever heard that song before. Disco Juice.
Yeah. No, it's great stuff. It's really great stuff.
All right. You gotta love an instrumental.
Honestly, I wish instrumentals were more popular.
They used to be.
I know.
They used to chart. They were hits. Hey, listen, even the theme from SWAT, the TV show, was a massive hit in the 70s. I want to say the last instrumental that was a hit, and this is how long ago it was, like a big hit, was Axel F. from Beverly Hills Cop. I want to say that was probably the last instrumental that was a really big hit. I may be missing something here, but because I know Herbie Hancock's Rocket was a big hit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was before, though. But I think the last really big hit instrumental was Axel F.
Probably, yeah. Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago.
Very long time
1984, ago. That movie came out.
Yeah.
So, all right. What's next on the funky docket?
I think someone was thinking of you specifically with this one from the 847.
Oh, please.
Troglodyte. Caveman.
Oh, please.
Listening to his stereo.
Jimmy Castor.
Sometimes he'd get up, try to do his thing. He'd begin to move. Something like this. Dance. Dance. When he got tired of dancing alone, he'd look in the mirror and say, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman.
Gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman, gotta find a woman. I had Jimmy Castor on my show. Like in the mid-2000s, 2007 or 2008, when the Cubs were vying in the for playoffs. And for some reason, at Simon's, the bar at Simon's, they had the Best of Jimmy Castor bunch on the jukebox, the CD. And for some reason, the Bertha Butt Boogie became the theme of the 2007 or 2008, I can't remember what year, Cubs. Mm-hmm. So like every time they'd score a run, the entire bar would go, dum, bum. Ba-ba-dum, ba-bum-bum-bum, ba-ba-dum. We would play it on the jukebox while the games were on. Bum, bum, ba-ba-dum. So I had Jimmy Castor on the show, and he was a character, man.
I can only imagine.
He was great, and he thought the story was hilarious.
Yeah, man.
That we're all sitting in the bar going, bum, bum, ba-ba-dum, ba-dum, bum, bum, ba-ba-dum. All right. What's next?
Let's close it out here, I think. One last one.
Last one.
Stylistics.
Oh,
you make
please.
Me feel like brand
oh,
new.
Please.
And you can thank Gary for that one. Thank you very much.
Gary.
God bless you. You make me feel brand new.
That is another great. So we've had some great songs this morning on Fly Jams Friday. So we do this every Friday, and we like to start off your weekend on a funky note. So every Friday we take your requests in the last part of the show for Fly Jams Friday, and we play back the great R&B classics. And we thank you for your requests. We thank Luscious Hushes, and there you go. Okay, WGN TV Morning News is up next.